It's time for TWiT. What a great panel we have today. Harry McCracken, the technologizer, here from Fast Company. Dan Gilmore, professor of journalism at Arizona State. And, Dr. Owen J.J. Stone. Of course, we're going to talk about that silly video the chairman of the FCC made to defend his rulings on net neutrality, the new $5,000 iMac Pro, the Disney Murdoch deal, and the Fire TV hack. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 645. Recorded Sunday, December 17th, 2017. Not a bright guy. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. And by Motive. The Motive Ring is a fitness, heart rate, and sleep tracker that monitors activity while being comfortable and stylish. For $20 off your first order, visit mymotive.com and enter TWiT at checkout. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/TWiT and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by WordPress. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off your brand new website today at wordpress.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show where we get together with the some of the most interesting tech journalists in the country and talk and chew the fat over the tech news of the week. On my left, the technologizer, Harry McCracken. Always a thrill to have Harry on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
Been a while. I've been enjoying your Twitter.
Remember to plug Fast Company, though.
Oh, yes. Now on Fast Company. FastCompany.com. We don't have his lower third up. Let's put up a lower third so you get a special billboard. There you go. There you go. At Harry McCracken on the Twitter. Haven't seen Dan Gilmore in ages. Dan is a great journalist, was a long time at the San Jose Mercury News, now is kind of promoting citizen journalism. And where are you these days?
At the moment, I'm home in the Bay Area.
Welcome back.
Yeah. I am part of the faculty at the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Arizona State, where I go periodically, and working on a new project that's called the News Collab to do experiments to help improve essentially the place where supply and demand meet, and the demand side too. It's going to be really fun.
I have to say, this year has really hit home for me how important journalism is, how important the fourth estate is, the fourth branch of government is, and more than ever. And I think it's actually been, believe it or not, a good year for journalism. But it's also an important year for us to solve these thorny problems of how to make journalism work in the internet age.
And how to make us, the audience, work better, too. We have a lot of work.
we might need a little help there as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of people who need help, Owen J.J. Stone, Doctor, is here. YQMZ.com. Hey, J.J.
Hey, so first of all, shout out to the chat room. Always a bunch of great people in there. My wall art is coming back. I just painted the walls. I got a new wall. So the wall art's coming back. Don't worry about that. And I'll be changing up every episode I'm on next year. Secondly, Leo, just so you know up front, so it's on record, every time you throw to me for a statement, there's going to be a $2.25 charge. I got to get ahead on this FCC thing. So I'm trying to bank up some money. Anybody who comes to my house, you want the Wi-Fi password, that's going to be a $10 charge also, okay? If you share the Wi-Fi password with somebody else, you're responsible for their $10 charge. I'm just putting it out there to the public. So everybody knows the rules.
You got to make a profit. I understand completely.
It's not about making a profit. I just got to pay for this Netflix. When they start slowing me down, start charging me extra for Facebook. I got to start early, Uncle Leo. We got to get this guap.
So, of course, Thursday, I think it was, the FCC passed the long-expected revocation of the net neutrality regulation that had been put in place in 2015, the Title II regulation, and basically turned back the clock on net neutrality. It's been interesting to watch the reaction. And it does, just as the vote did, it does kind of break down along party lines. There are a lot of people, I even had a conversation on the radio show today with somebody who said, but you don't want the government to regulate the internet. And of course you don't, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the government regulating internet service providers. And I think maybe part of this is kind of, part of it is ideological. I mean, there are certainly people who don't want regulation, don't like government regulation. I can understand that. In fact, I remember the debates that the Electronic Frontier Foundation had over whether, you know, they would come out in favor of a regulation, of a Title II regulation of the internet, because there were certainly people on the board there who thought that no government intervention in the internet was needed or necessary. But I loved Larry Lessig's tweet. I'm going to see if I can find it, because I think he kind of crystallized it for me. And certainly Larry has the standing to comment on this. Let's see. He's at Lessig on the Twitter. Let me see if I can find his tweet here, because I think it was a good response to people who say, well, but wait a minute, we don't need government regulation. We haven't had it for years. The net did just fine. He made the point that, well, we have had net neutrality. The net was born neutral, and there are plenty of laws protecting a net neutrality. From day one, he was responding to Ted Cruz's statement, which I think reflects accurately the conservative point of view on it. Let me see if I can find it so I can read it. I see it on the screen, but I don't have it here. Did I skip by it? He's been very active. There it is. Ted said, "Snowflake, believing online propaganda." Here he quotes the quote, "Snowflake, OMG, without net neutrality, the internet is gone." Informed Observer, says Ted Cruz, apparently. Ted, you know, the FCC issued that rule in 2015. The internet grew up wonderfully free of government regulation, and this restores the status quo. Snowflake, never mind. It's kind of nice Ted can have conversations with himself in which everything works out well. But Larry pointed out that the ignorance in this tweet is astonishing. The net was born neutral. From the beginning, the FCC and others fought to keep it neutral. The 2015 rules assured its neutrality. Then the clueless or corrupt took that protection away. If you think that there is reasonable argument for some government regulation, keep the water safe, the air safe, to make sure that the butcher's scale delivers a pound of hamburger for a pound of hamburger and not three quarters of a pound, or the gas pump gives you a full gallon when you think you're paying for a gallon, then you might agree that we need people to keep an eye on businesses like the internet service providers to make sure that they follow the rules. I think of the FCC as a referee representing our interests in the face of business, whose interests, face it, are to make money. And that's how we want it. We want businesses to be profit-focused. What went wrong? Why are we sitting here with something that has been protected since day one on the internet gone? I'll start with you, Harry. And by the way, if you think my analysis of this is mistaken, please set me straight.
Well, we have a chair of the FCC who was opposed to the 2015 law. I mean, that's the most fundamental.
So what happened was, we had net neutrality. The Verizon sued the FCC saying, you don't have the standing to do this. Congress didn't give you permission to do this. And the courts were very conveniently said to the judge, almost whispered it, by the way, you have the authority, but only if you declare that internet service providers, broadband providers, are common carriers. You can regulate common carriers. You have to declare them common carriers using Title II of the Telecommunications Act. So the FCC went back, debated it. Remember, we had big comment session. And I think at first, Tom Wheeler, who was the chairman of the FCC, didn't like this idea. He was a Republican, didn't like this idea. But he was convinced, okay, Title II regulation, that's the tool we have as the FCC. We're going to do something we call light touch regulation. We're not going to take advantage of all the features of Title II, but we are going to use it to ensure net neutrality. Passed that in 2015, and that's been the law of the land. But it, there have been previous things. In fact, prior to that, I remember AT&T got a fine from the FCC because they blocked FaceTime.
There were several cases. There was a ISP that prevented Vonage telephony calls from going on its network, and they got in trouble too.
We were very the concern was that companies would use their position as an internet service provider to block competitors or to try to extract more money by saying, we're going to charge, Google or Netflix more money to reach our subscribers, a toll road, to prioritize traffic in some way. And so that the idea was that the FCC is the referee in this matter, and we'll try to keep that fair.
And the case for this not being a disaster is if companies that do that sort of thing and abuse their power do get in trouble, because there are antitrust issues with things like AT&T preventing a competitive service from running.
Sure, if you have antitrust regulation. Yeah. Chairman Pai said we're going to have the FTC monitor net neutrality going forward. The FTC said we don't have the technical chops to do this. We have an enforcement arm. The FTC could step in if an internet service provider says you're going to get 20 megabits down and you only get 10. That's, unfair advertising. But there's a lot of technical behind-the-scenes stuff.
Right, and that is the scary thing is there might be stuff we just don't know about happening. Pai's video, which he made, which I assume we'll talk about.
We're going to play.
Kind of glossed over the stuff that we need to be concerned about and suggested that if Instagram works, then there's no issue here, which is not true at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy. This is, frankly, I found this the most insulting thing.
It was really patronizing, and he came off as a total bozo.
This is Ajit Pai, 7 things you can still do on the internet after net neutrality. He's holding a fidget spinner, a gun.
I'm Ajit Pai. I'm the chairman of the FCC. Recently, there's been quite a bit of conversation about my plan to restore internet freedom. Here are just a few of the things.
Wait a minute. Let me pause for a moment. Internet freedom? He's restoring internet freedom? Well, that's good news. I'm in favor of internet freedom. It's actually the freedom for internet service providers to do whatever
freedom
the hell
for
they
Verizon
want.
And AT&T and Comcast.
Not the freedom. No, our freedom. Their freedom. Okay.
Able to do clear. On the internet after these Obama-era regulations are repealed.
Oh, by the way, they love using the Obama name. And that's one of the reasons I think a lot of people think, this is from 2015. This has been the status quo forever, as Larry Lessig pointed out. This is not Obama era. Painting it with the Obama brush is a way to get some people to say, we want to get rid of that.
Gram your food.
You can still Instagram your food.
You can gram your food.
He's so hip. He's so with it. He uses the...
You can still gram your food.
What the... Does anybody call it gramming? Anybody? You know what's really offensive? Government, our tax dollars were spent to make this propaganda crap.
It was on the Daily Caller site, I think. I'm not sure who paid for it.
Oh, maybe the Daily Caller paid for it?
I'm not sure. I mean, he did take his time to make this
Let's point out we are paying Ajit Pai a salary to put sriracha on his Cheetos. Oh, that's disgusting.
Quality. Are you selfieing or just...
So insulting.
You can still post photos of cute animals, like puppies. You can still shop for all your Christmas presents online. Yes. Got that bulk deal on fidget spinners.
Is that a Chromebook? All right, just check.
Yes! Those Eclipse glasses are so cheap.
Oh, Lord. Isn't this what you want your elected officials? He's not elected. He's appointed to look like on the holidays. If I didn't think Ajit Pai was an ass before, I really think he's an ass now.
Yeah, you just spent that amount of time trying to make a serious case for a stance.
Yeah.
Ben Thompson gave the best case I saw for this potentially not being a disaster, but he's one of the few people I've seen who actually knows what he's talking about, who
came
to it with a somewhat open mind.
Ben realized that he used the wrong headline for his article. He said why Ajit Pai is right, and he actually wanted to change that afterwards.
And Ben's piece is long and complicated and full of subtleties.
I could sum it up. Ben's piece says, if there's competition, you don't need the FCC to referee this.
And there's not enough competition in this country.
There's not competition, period. And Ben's in China. Maybe he doesn't understand that. Dan, what do you think of all this? What's your opinion?
Oh, God, the insult to your intelligence that this represents when people like Pai make these statements that are just false. What's at stake here is really, really pretty simple. And that's going to be who decides what bits of information get to your devices and my devices and the public's devices, in what order, at what speed, or whether they get there at all. Do you decide? Do we decide out here? Or does Comcast decide? Or Verizon? Or Time Warner Cable? Or whatever they're called now. That is really what's at stake. And as of this week, barring court overturning it, and certainly Congress won't, it's the internet companies, the carriers, that will be able to make those decisions. And I think one of the problems with all this is that it has become partisan, and that's just mysterious, because I would have thought Republicans would favor a world of competition, and now they're voting for a world of no competition, because in a lot of places there is absolutely none, or at most two real competitors in a market. It's very, very puzzling, and we're going to, over time, I think, see some terrible impacts from this, and it's a bad day.
And Ben says we should. I mean, I really want to clear Ben's name because he's not against net
neutrality. He's not a pie sympathizer.
Nor is he. He says, "Allow me to state this point plainly. I'm absolutely in favor of net neutrality. To believe Chairman Pai is right is not to be against net neutrality. Rather, it's to believe that the FCC's 2015 approach was mistaken." Now, I think Ben's misunderstanding what Ajit Pai's agenda is. It's not to change Title II regulation. And by the way, I think, is it safe to say we all agree that there's no question that broadband providers are not information services, that they are, in fact, Title II-style carriers, right?
Well, Comcast certainly thinks it's an information provider because they're buying all these movie studios and TV networks and so forth.
Yeah, well, that does muddy the waters. But that, to the degree that they are in that position, that makes them even more of a danger, because
yes,
they are now both playing both sides. They're competing with YouTube.
And AT&T would like to be a content owner. They'd like to own Time Warner. So, yes, it totally
is. That what this is about? Is that these guys are becoming content providers and they want to kind of tilt the playing field?
That's part of why it's so dangerous, because they are competing with the other companies whose bits they are delivering, and they have a much larger conflict of interest if they'd much rather you watched their streaming service than Netflix or YouTube.
Yeah. All right. I saved the best for last. I'm sure O Doctor is completely in favor of Ajit Pai and what he's up to, right, Owen?
I am 1,000% in love with that man. First of all, Snowflake, that video is not meant for me, so it doesn't insult me. It doesn't make me feel bad. That's a marketing ploy to pander to doofuses that will believe him. That's not me. That's not the base I usually identify
myself.
You don't
gram your sriracha Cheetos?
I don't even know why that made you feel any which way but loose. I mean, if you are, then you're too worried about Instagram if that made you feel some sort of way. Who cares about that video? That video, that statement, it's marketing to people that don't know any better. I personally understand, one, that this was a vote and a change. You can appoint another chairman when you get another president, and you could change things again. So maybe you have to suffer for a few years, but legally things could change and happen. So it's not like this is the last thing that's ever been done on the internet, and it's the way it's going to be for the rest of time. I personally appreciate this administration. I appreciate moves like this, and I'm going to give you the perfect example why. I have a friend, I'm not going to say his name, went to high school with him. He is a pothead, works hard, got three kids, great guy, but he just likes to play video games and smoke weed and take care of his family. Now, he's researching net neutrality, FCC. He's reading articles and calling me. He knows about the budget, the tax bill. He knows about the education bill. This is a guy who wasn't registered to vote until this year. 35 years old, he's lived his life. Never voted for anybody, never read nothing, never cared about nothing. Now, this person, like a lot of people, are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because now this administration is so – the news is about political shows, so I'm trying to make it real simple. This administration wears its heart on its sleeves, where past administrations, they screw you over a little bit, but they were smart about it, and they pat you on the back, make you feel good so you accept things. This administration is a bulldozer that is for sale, and people can see that it's blatantly for sale. And so now more people that are regular average Americans want to know what's going on. Because when you see net neutrality in your internet, people that would have never cared before now care because they're like, whoa, wait, what? So personally, like I said, I'm not super worried about it. I'm just going to charge my $10 fee when you come to my house, start stacking up these chips just in case they start messing up. Because, again, people don't understand when they say, oh, and there's competition. I live in a small town. I just moved across town. This town is the smallest town in New Jersey. On the other side of town, I had Fios and Verizon. I always had Verizon. I moved over here. There's nothing but Comcast. I can barely even get Dish Network out here because they just don't come out here because nobody has it. Everybody has Comcast. So some places don't even have two options in any part of their town. That's the difference with cell phones. Cell phones, yeah, everybody started giving out free unlimited internet because anybody could go get anybody's cell phone. That's what competition is. You're like, oh, man, everybody's moving to T-Mobile because they're giving away Netflix and free internet for $40. Next thing you know, Verizon, who's been killing people for years, is like, all right, we'll give you a crappy unlimited 45-hour plan. Is that happy? You make you happy? So, like I said, I'm super excited about these times. I'm not that worried about it. I'm not that upset about it. That video is amusing to me, but it doesn't upset me because I have faith in the future. I like the fact that people are riled up. I like the fact that people care. And when they care, they vote. And when you talk about Republicans, Republicans do what they get paid to do. What lobbyists tell them to do is what they do. Parties and principles have changed. They're not what they used to be. Now we are a country of funding. And when you get funding, that's what you abide by. So let's cut off the funds. Let's cut off these votes.
I agree.
We can change anything we want to change.
Long term, the only solution, and by the way, it's not just Republicans. Democrats take plenty of money from the trough.
No. I'm just saying.
And by the way, Larry Lessig, who we were quoting early on, feels the same way. Remember, he ran for president in 2016, didn't really do very well. But he had for a long time been campaigning against digital rights management, copy protection on music and so forth. And he realized he's never going to get anything done in Congress ever unless we got campaign finance reform. We need to get money out of politics.
Yes.
So he ran for president in 2016 on the strangest platform ever. He said, if I get the nomination, I will pick a really good vice president, somebody who should run the country, not me. If I get elected, the day one, I will do campaign finance reform. You're never going to get the people who benefit from the current campaign finance laws to change them. And of course, that's Congress. He said, I will do campaign finance reform, resign, let the very good vice president run the country, but we will have made a huge difference by taking the influence of money out of politics. I don't know how doable that is. I doubt it'll happen in my lifetime. I guess the one thing I like it that you're an optimist, Owen. And I guess the one thing that's optimistic about all this is you're exactly right, is that all money buys you is votes. The reason politicians need to raise money is they need to campaign for votes. The ultimate currency here is not dollars. The ultimate currency is your vote. And if more people vote, more people become informed and more people, participate, then I don't have nearly the worry we have today. I agree with you, Owen. I think it's so very optimistic.
If you're a person who said, oh, I'm not worried about this, and you campaigned on it, then the next time your election comes up, people are going to be like, hey, they're charging me $35 a month for Facebook, and you back this? No, you're out. Whoever you are, you're out. So, this is a situation that I fully believe will fix itself.
I hope you're right. I do. You agree, Dan? You think it's all going to be better in 2 years?
No. I think it's going to be a lot worse in 2 years. But the part I agree with is that some of the stuff's getting people to pay attention, which a lot of the people weren't. But you can lock a lot of bad stuff into place in a real hurry. And watch what, for example, the administration and the Republican Party are doing with judges. They're locking in a generation or two of extreme right-wing judiciary, which is not likely to be on the side of things that we're talking about. So I'm optimistic only in that one level, but I think we're in for some pretty difficult times ahead.
Well, we need to. This is our opportunity. This is our moment. Our Hamiltonian moment. All right, enough. We've talked about it. I had to bring it up. I think certainly we've made our case. You need to make up your own mind, but I think we've made a strong case for why we believe that there needs to be somebody playing referee in this game. Getting rid of the referees is not the answer. Letting the ISPs, the broadband providers, decide what's good and what's not is not the answer by any means. We'll be back. Lots more to talk about in just a second. Great panel. Harry McCracken, the technologizer from FastCompany.com. Great to have you. From the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism, Mr. Dan Gilmore, legendary. DanGilmore.com, GILLMOR.com. And it's nice to have you in the Bay Area. So do you spend most of your time in Arizona, or you go?
No. No, I've been here pretty much all along.
I go there
part-time.
So it's a kind of an honorary position. You don't have to.
No, I do a lot of work.
Oh, good. Okay. I want a job like that. I'm going to move to Hawaii, and I'll just phone the shows in, everybody. You don't mind, do you? No, I can stay there. Oh, and J.J. Stone, he is also here, even though he is not on, he wants everyone to know he is not on medication. He's here
today.
Anyway.
I'm good.
He's suffering
today.
Along with us. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. I know that interest rates are starting to go up. The Fed has raised them a quarter of a point. I think they said they're going to do that three more times next year. Maybe it's a good time to look at refinancing your house, lock in that low interest rate you've got, or even a lower interest rate. Maybe you're ready to buy a home. Excuse me. Now's a good time to do that. And either way, I want you to remember this. RocketMortgage.com/twit2. Bookmark it. Go, save the day. Put a little post-it note on your screen. Because when you buy a house, the biggest purchase you're ever going to make, you're going to get a mortgage. Unless you're doing really well, in which case you don't need this ad. So you can just, go have a cigar and burn some money. But if you're going to get a loan to buy a new house, you want to make it, you're a geek. You want to make it easy. You want to make it fast. You want to make it simple. You want to get the right loan for you. And that's how Rocket Mortgage works. It's created by Quicken Loans, best lender in the country. Number one in customer satisfaction on mortgage approval, mortgage servicing. Mortgage approval, 8 years running. They just got the J.D. Power customer satisfaction number one award again this year. I think that's awesome. And because they're so technological, they're a very savvy company, they realized that the mortgage process was really kind of 19th century. They thought, we need a technological revolution that's client-focused, that's easier, and they created Rocket Mortgage. You can do everything online. You don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to, go to the attic and get paperwork. You don't have to find your pay stubs, your check statements. All of it can be done on the phone. And because it's computerized, literally on the phone, in a browser on the phone, it's computerized. It's very easy for you. Answer some basic questions you know the answer to. They have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions, so they can get all the information they need. They'll crunch the numbers and literally, within minutes, come back based on your income, assets, and credit with the right loans for you. You choose the down payment. You choose the interest rate. You choose the term. You're approved. That fast. This is how you want to do it. And by the way, they've got great rates. I was talking to somebody yesterday, refied through Rocket Mortgage. He said, best rate I could find anywhere. He shopped around. Shop around. Although you won't enjoy the process. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. That's the process you want. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. And if it's time to refi, rocketmortgage.com/twit2. That's rocketmortgage.com/twit2. You can actually go there and start the process and then pull the trigger whenever you find that house that you want. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank them for their support. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, rocketmortgage.com/twit, and the number 2. It's funny how net neutrality has become a hot button for the political discussion. I get so many tweets from people saying, oh, you're wrong. It's the wrong idea. Even the FCC's own CTO warned that net neutrality would cause problems. You saw the letter written by the 30 men and women who, 30 men and women who built the internet, who continue to run the internet, saying this is a bad idea. There's a great consensus among the digerati. There just doesn't seem to be a great consensus nationwide.
But there were millions of fake people who contributed statements.
2 million
against it.
This is the Attorney General of New York, Eric Schneiderman, says there were 2 million fake accounts created on that FCC. And who did that? That's what I want to know. Where did they come from?
As far as I know, we don't know. There is a great site you can go to, though, to check to see if you're one of the fake people.
In fact, the FCC is actually actively blocking Schneiderman's investigation. They're not helping. Which, again, this bothers me. If this agency were acting in our interest, wouldn't they want to know, you know, what was going on? They basically ignored the comments.
Yep.
They had no interest in the comments. They didn't care what you think, which is also frustrating. This week, moving on, Apple announced a $5,000 computer. That's the starting price for the new iMac Pro, slate gray. Did you order? Y'all order one? Anybody?
I got six of them on the way.
It's kind of fun, actually. You know what? I didn't order one. I thought maybe I should get one for review, and I thought, no, they got it to Marcus Brownlee. I don't need to review it. Marcus will review it. And it really is more appropriate for people who are going to use it to edit high def 8K video and stuff like that. And that's pretty much who they kind of handed it out to.
People who want 128 gigs of RAM in some places.
The 5K only comes with a scant 32 gigs of RAM?
Measly.
Measly. Let's see. I just got a curiosity. I want to get... You can't yet get the promised 16 cores. So the most we can... Oh, wait a minute. Let's see. Yeah, most we can do is 10 cores. 2 terabytes of storage? Why not? 128 gigs RAM? Why not? Okay. What else can I do? I'm going to beef it up because it's not the fastest Xeon. What's the fastest one? Oh, this is something people should pay attention to, by the way. The fastest Xeon is cheaper because it's 8 core. The 10 core is 3.0 gigahertz. That's as fast as it goes, which points out this may not be the fastest iMac for you. This is only makes sense for somebody who's doing multi-core stuff like editing 8K video.
This is for the folks who spent a lot of time saying that Apple had basically forgotten about them and abandoned them. This is part of this two-step program of Apple's to show that's not true, with the second one being the new Mac Pro.
Which, and by the way, we don't know when that's coming. That's what I decided. Because I got it up to $11,599, and then I decided not to buy it. But that's if you load it, right? And it's going to be even more when they have the newer processors available later. So I decided I'm going to wait for the Mac Pro. But is that a fool's errand? All they said about the Mac Pro is not this year.
Well, in general, I'll be interested to see how many super serious video editing kind of people want an iMac. Because historically... they like to choose their own display and maybe upgrade it on a different timetable than the computer. They like expandability. They like being able to stick gigantic hard drives inside their computer. They liked all the stuff that the classic Mac Pro, the ones before this last one, the little cylindrical trash can one.
I had a trash can. It was a doorstop for a while. And then I gave it to Nathan Oliver.
How many people bought the trash can? They're just messing up in this market. I mean, again, they are trying to cater to that certain finite group. But I mean, for peace's sake, when you look at the product itself, like I can go put that stuff in any other machine for like $1.99 and they want like $8 million. It's kind of excessive right now what Apple's doing, especially when they're not offering something a little bit better. I mean, again, the trash can, it looked cool, but it wasn't functional for the professionals that needed to use it. The new MacBook Pro is a consumer book pro. They've got emojis and little swipe things and touchscreens at the top. I don't want that. That's not what I need in a professional device. And you want to charge $3,000 for it, and you're making it for high school kids. I don't know what's going on over there right now, Apple. It's really weird.
It's not an outrageous price, though. Some people spec'd out a Windows machine with similar specs, and it was a little less expensive, but it wasn't hugely less expensive.
Typically, that's true. Windows looks a lot cheaper, but the more the same you make them, the closer they get, and Windows ends up being maybe a little bit cheaper, and it's a lot of the time it's possible to find a Windows machine that's a little bit more expensive.
Right.
Yeah, it's usually the RAM that starts coming around with that device. Once you start... like when you get capped out at RAM, you can put 64. It's very comparable. I'm just being facetious because I'm annoyed with the device. So
we actually, we put our money where our mouth is. We traded in our Mac Pros and got Windows, Dell workstations running Premiere because we just didn't know what Apple's plans were. This was a few years ago.
And are you any happier or less happy?
Doesn't matter. That's the point, right? It doesn't matter. And it's kind
like
of
Adobe.
Yeah. Well, I'm not thrilled with Adobe. That's for other reasons. Adobe seems to be going down a bad path, too.
But
in fact,
it's not
a good time to be a pro, creative pro, is it?
But like the Adobe software is the same experience.
Premiere does everything we need it to do. Absolutely. I think there are people who need Final Cut Pro. And if you do, one thing that's true, there's going to be a new version of Final Cut Pro 10, and it's going to be tuned to work with this 10-core iMac. Craig Hunter, who is a developer, he's doing a AR app called Theodolite, got a review unit. This is one of the reviews that I, you know, kind of more trusted because he did a lot of benchmarking. He tried out computational fluid dynamics on it. And what he found is what you'd expect, which is that if it's a single core process, it's not going to do as well. But because it's a slower chip, he compared it to other Macs, which, you know, but for multi-core, you're going to really have a huge advantage. It's if you know you need it, then you need it and probably are willing to pay for it because he points out that compilation is so much faster for him that because he's got an app with 20 to 30,000 lines of code and 120 different source files. So Woo. That makes a big, yeah, that makes a big difference to him. Vector processing. He did a bunch of benchmarks. So this is a good, for people who want to know, hrtapps.com. He said his wallet burst into flames.
Apple's PR strategy was pretty smart, though. They
you think so?
They loaned these to the people who know what they're talking about.
Not so much to the publications, right? Not to The Verge and Engadget.
Rather than to the computer sites, they loaned them to actual human beings who do this stuff and have a deep knowledge of it. And, you know, the reviews they got back were generally, I think, were fairly favorable, although they pointed out this is not a panacea for everybody. But I think... But for some of the grumblers, that looks like it will make a difference.
Yeah. I every time I criticize Apple, people say, yeah, the most valuable company in the world. Somebody did the calculations. And Apple apparently makes $1,447 a second. Is that right? Yeah, $1,444.76 per second. Which, in fact, makes it quite profitable.
And their revenue from these machines is going to be a rounding error, even if they're really successful.
They aren't going to sell that many, and they don't want to. That's not the point.
But they probably don't like being beat up constantly
right.
by people who are unhappy with them on the internet.
Right. Let's see. Apple spent a little of that money on a company called Shazam, $400 million for Shazam. Shazam, actually, apparently a bargain basement price because they were valued even higher than that. Shazam, correct me if I'm wrong, Shazam, at least the public-facing business of Shazam is figuring out what songs they're hearing right now.
I don't know how they make that much money. I mean, see, certain things I don't use as average user. Anytime I've ever used Shazam, I don't even click through because once you play a song and it recognizes or even a show... It'll bring up to you iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, wherever. And it's like, oh, do you want to buy it? And you can click right through the app and it'll take it to you. And since I pay for Apple Music and Spotify, I just back right back out and then go put it in my playlist. And Shazam never even gets a click or anything from me. So I guess they get the view from the app. But I'm like, how do they make this much money? Especially now when you could just say, you could talk to Siri and Siri will just tell you what song is playing. You don't even have to like fully go into Shazam. You're not just a partner or whatever. I just don't know how they make so much money.
But maybe Apple would make more because they have Apple Music. But after we looked at this on MacBreak Weekly this week, I think we came to the conclusion that it wasn't really for Shazam the product, but that the Shazam team was pretty sophisticated and that it probably was for the engineering talent. It just tells you how much engineering talent is worth. $400 million.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll do what Google did with the new Pixel phones, which they have a Shazam type feature.
I know, isn't that funny?
So you just pull out your phone.
To me, that devalues Shazam because my phone is always listening and will tell me what I was listening to.
You don't even need to ask. And if Apple does that at some point.
Put that on the iPhone. But the problem is that the Google phones have an always-on screen. Right. The iPhone screen dims.
Yeah, Apple needs to start doing stuff with an always-on screen, which I assume they will do at some point.
Oh, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
But yeah,
they're always 3 years behind, so they'll get it.
They'll invent it in about 2019, you think?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
The always on screen.
It's thinner and lighter than ever before.
Actually, I'm gonna defend the iPhone X. I really think it's a beautiful phone. I'm very happy with it. But I have to say, I've noticed something ever since I got Android 8.1 on the Google Pixel 2. Android 8.1, maybe Dan, with your long history in technology, you can remember. I can't remember a company ever doing this. Google never announced it, but they built in a chip. There's a DSP, dedicated DSP for photography in the Pixel 2 that wasn't turned on when it shipped. They never told anybody about it. And it just got turned on with the release of Android 8.1. And the pictures got noticeably better. It was a really interesting. I can't think of a company ever doing that before.
Secret. Maybe we haven't been told before.
Yeah.
Cameras these days are essentially the software. That's what distinguishes them. The chip that's the processing stuff is important, and you get more power doing it, but increasingly software. That's why Apple's phones have had better cameras for a long time. They were better at it.
Yeah.
But Google really caught up. One thing I'd like to see Apple do with some of that money it makes every second is pay its fair share of taxes, but that's also a strange request in our current world.
Actually, it's because
they're not the only one dodging.
Everybody is. But didn't Facebook this week announce that they were going to start paying their not taxes locally? They're not going to use the double Irish tax strategy that Apple, Google, and many others had used? I thought that was very interesting. Remember that this strategy, this double Irish with the Dutch sandwich, I think that's what it's called, is not illegal, although the EU has started to go to countries that do this, and particularly Ireland, and say, no, you got to charge taxes. You can't not charge taxes. The reason Ireland was getting the tax, the cash inflow from all these companies is they had close to zero corporate taxes. The EU has demanded that Ireland go back to Apple and ask for the money. And maybe that's why Facebook is doing it.
Well, it'd be a competitive advantage. Facebook has enough money to pay the taxes. Apple does too. At some point, this is all going to end up with massive bills from Europe if they don't.
So you think it's that? I thought it might be that Mark Zuckerberg is running for president, and in a couple of years he doesn't want people to come at him saying, you don't even pay your taxes.
Our president says he doesn't pay taxes.
I don't know.
Taxes,
look, so yeah,
that's not a real issue.
Exactly. Doesn't hurt, huh?
It's not been an issue so far.
Facebook.
Yeah, not the way that it should, anyway.
Facebook it paid in taxes in 2014 in Ireland $6,000 in taxes
seems
in Ireland.
To me.
Yeah, seems fair. In the U.S., it's got a bill. It's battling with the IRS for $5 billion plus interest and penalties due to global operations reported by the Irish unit. So it is kind of in a little bit of trouble. And I guess it's legal until somebody says it's not. The European Commission has ordered Apple to pay 13 billion euros. That's about $15 billion in back taxes. Apple's agreed to put that money in escrow while it appeals. The EU says Ireland gave it unfair deal. Ireland's also appealing, by the way.
A question of part of my ignorance, but does Facebook do a rev share with the ads that they put on videos now?
Does Facebook do a rev share? You mean with the publishers?
Yeah.
Did they not do that?
Historically, they didn't, but I thought they'd been dabbling with it at least.
Oh, dabbling, because that's more of a concern to me when you're out there running these ads and not paying or sharing the money that you're forcing ads upon. I don't know. There's a lot of things that we could worry about, people not getting paid and skirting funds and, you know, paying people their fair share of things. So, but it's the American way. That's the way the laws are written. And so it's not cheating until you get caught. So
they don't have it fully in place like YouTube does. That's for sure.
I think they said they were going to start doing it. I don't know what the current state is. They're also telling publishers now to put mid-roll ads in, right? And pre-roll ads. They're really pushing publishers to do more advertising.
Hey, Leo, I have to make a disclosure if I'm going to talk about Facebook at all, and that is they are one of the funders of the new collaborative lab that we started at Arizona State. So just that has to be disclosed.
I'm glad you did that. And Jeff Jarvis does that every time we talk about Facebook on Twig as well, because he's part of that Facebook initiative, the journalism initiative. Is this related to that?
They're another of the funders.
Okay.
The News Integrity.
News Integrity Initiative. That's right. Yeah. But I trust both you and Jeff. I know that you're not going to stint. You're not going to hold back in criticizing Facebook. So
we agree on little, but when it comes to getting public better informed and trying to slow down this plague of misinformation, we do agree on that.
Yeah, something needs to be done. That's for sure. I think it's interesting. I wonder if Apple and Google and others who are using the Apple stopped using the Irish double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. I just like saying that. And has now started burying money in the island of Jersey. And because the financial financial press hasn't yet dubbed that anything, I'm going to call it the Jersey fudge. And so they've moved from... and I only call it that for one reason. We have a friend, a viewer who lives in Jersey. He's watching right now. Calls himself Jersey Fudge and brings us fudge from Jersey. Apparently, they have very lovely cows in Jersey. And a lot of Apple money all of a sudden. Billions of dollars pouring. And guess what? What do you guess Jersey's corporate tax rate is, the Isle of Jersey? What would just take a wild guess? How much do they charge companies? Zero. Of course. Why else would you put your money there, right? I don't imagine Apple makes a lot of money in Jersey.
Cows don't buy a lot of computers.
And I agree with you, Dan, but Apple is quick to point out, yeah, well, but it's legal, so we're going to do it because it's our fiduciary responsibility to our shareholders to maximize profits.
There was a time when companies actually had some interest in the public good. That seems to be...
It's long gone.
Disappeared, yeah.
I'll qualify that. They wish to appear to have an interest in the public good.
I think there have been companies over our history that cared a lot about the communities that they were based in and did a lot of good things for them. And there are, I think, still a lot of corporations that have a corporate conscience of some sort. We just do live in a time when people are every incentive is to please shareholders and top executives and law and otherwise, and hardly any incentive to do anything else.
Yeah.
Also, we're more of a global economy. Before, when you used to make jackets down the street and everybody worked at the jacket factory, it's like, oh, this is 100% made here. Apple says designed in California, but they're not making these devices, so they've got to send stuff out. They're outsourcing stuff. They're shipping stuff back in. And basically, America is now just a service center. We don't make anything anymore. We just sell stuff to each other over and over and over again and feed each other pizzas. So the stock in caring about your community and your people is different because the megacorps are global brands that literally just outsource all the work. So it's like, well, you don't even really work for us. All you do is pass a phone over to somebody and swipe a credit card. You didn't slave away in a factory building this stuff. So it's a different mindset and it's a different mentality. And that's why people here don't get as angry about it as they should, because if they did, then that tax situation and other things and jobs would change, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah is kind of sums it all up, doesn't it?
Pretty much.
Let's see. Apple launches its podcast. As long as I'm in the Apple section, we can stick with Apple for a little bit. It's podcast analytics service in the beta. We will not be using this. I'm not sure why Apple is doing this. I think the problem I have with this is only about half of our listeners, half of you, listen on iTunes. So this won't be valuable analytics material for us. Although, I don't know, maybe.
I'd like to see the analytics on the people watching their creative content.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
You mean like Planet of the Apps?
Yeah.
There is a show, huh?
Oh, man. I forget. They just bought something recently. Oh, I just read it. That looked interesting. From Battlestar Galactica, they bought something for their show. Oh, man, I'm sorry. I'm butchering it because I can't remember what it is. But they bought something that looked interesting. Let's see if they actually put something interesting on their service for Apple Music subscribers.
They ordered a space drama from Ronald D. Moore.
There we go.
Is he the Battlestar Galactica guy? Is that? Who is he?
Yeah.
I'm afraid I'm just not up on my...
Me either. Again, just hoping...
Yeah, he's the mastermind. Ooh, he's the mastermind behind Battlestar Galactica. He helped shape TV as we know it. Wow.
And hopefully he can do something for them that makes my $9.99 or $15.99 a month worth it. Because everything I've tried to watch on there is just garbage.
Apple's ordered an entire series to be created and written by Moore, along with two executive producers of Fargo, which was also excellent.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and Gadget reports the series will explore what would have happened if the space race between the U.S., Soviet Russia, and the West of the world hadn't ended.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something I'm interested in.
See, so Apple is going to spend $1 billion on original content, which sounds like a lot until you find out that Netflix spent $8 billion this year and is on track to spend even more next year and the year after. This has become, isn't it interesting, the year of original content. All of these services realize that they can't rely on Hollywood and movies to propel their services, their subscription services, so they're all making their own stuff.
They also realize they can't afford it.
It's expensive.
Cheaper to keep her.
Yeah.
If you make your own, not only do you pay the money in-house, you keep it for yourself. You're exclusive to bring people to you. But then if you ever want to sell it to a network station later on down the line, you're like, hey, you want this old Punisher run? Here you go. It's all finished. We had her on Netflix for 10 years. Nobody's watching anymore. You want to put it on TNT?
There's a long tail, baby. Long tail.
Here you go.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
Really? You think it's that this is just a blip? This is a bubble?
Well, there's some bubble piece to it, mainly because I think probably I have a list of, I don't know, 7 or 8 things that look pretty good that I would like to watch. If I get to 3 of them, it'll be amazing.
I think that is a problem for us as viewers. It's overwhelming.
I think it's a problem for people that live where you live and do the job that you do. Because, again, out here in Regularville.
Yeah. What's it like in Regularville? Do you have a TV?
Okay.
Do you guys have indoor plumbing yet?
Let me tell you something. Me and 3 of my friends this week alone, we watched all the Jean-Claude Van Damme on Amazon in a day. 6 episodes talked about it. I watched all of Crackle Startup season 2 in about a day and a half. Watched The Punisher in 2 days. Like, bro.
Yeah, but you had kidney stones. You had an excuse.
Hey, look, I work from home, and I got a screen on with work, and I'm watching The Punisher on the other side. We're professionals, and you're a journalist. You got research to do. You got an important job. But regular people, that's why binge watching is a thing.
How much TV? On your average, how much TV a day or a week do you think?
I personally watch, I just don't sound horrible, I watch like 4 or 5 hours of TV a day on average.
I do too. I get home, I'm exhausted, I turn on the TV, I'll binge The Crown, or we'll binge Dark, or we'll binge, you know, there's a lot of binging involved.
I'm just saying, people be watching stuff, I don't know.
I wish you'd been over, I was watching The Crown, Lisa and I were watching The Crown, it's getting a little slow. I said, I'm going to make oatmeal cookies. And we had oatmeal cookies and we watched The Crown.
At the same time?
At the same time.
See, it's wintertime here, too. So me and my daughter are watching Family Matters and Doogie Howser.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
4 hours of Doogie Howser, 13 episodes.
I'll tell you who believes in streaming.
We watch TV.
I'll tell you who believes in the future of streaming. Disney. Disney just did a deal with Rupert Murdoch to buy the video assets, 20th Century Fox, Sky TV, the Hollywood Film Studio, from Rupert Murdoch for $66 billion. There's a very scary picture of Rupert Murdoch with Bob Iger and the Dome of St. Paul's in the distance. That is, if you don't spend that kind of money unless you think that you need a content, why would Disney buy this? Is it, as some said, a belief in streaming? One of the assets they get, which I think is very interesting, is all the local sports nets, the Fox sports nets all over the country. They don't get Fox News. They don't get politics.
They don't get FS1. They don't get FS2.
Don't they? I thought they did.
I don't think that's part of the deal. Am I mistaken?
I think they're getting, like, they're not getting the Fox network and they're not getting Fox News, but I thought they were getting almost everything else.
You're right. Assets that are not part of the sale will be spun off as a separate business called New Fox. Yeah. That'll be Fox TV, Fox News, Fox Business, Fox Sports, and the regional stations. So you're
there
right.
You go.
So that's a separate asset, a valuable asset, right? The
sports
stuff.
I mean, Disney believes in the future of streaming, but they believe in this future that's quite different from what we have now, because they believe in running their own streaming services and not.
That's what they're doing, aren't they? They took all the stuff off Netflix and said, no, we're going to put all the Disney stuff. And they're going to make their assets so valuable that people will pay for Disney TV.
And after this deal is done, they will control Hulu, because they'll own 60% of it.
That's right.
It sounds like they're reimagining Hulu as a place for the stuff they own that would not be appropriate on a Disney-centric service, which includes a lot of the Fox stuff they'll own.
FX? Do they get FX?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a great source of
the adultish Fox stuff. Right, they imagine Hulu as being the home for that.
I wasn't even thinking about streaming so much as that they, with this purchase and acquisition, they pretty much own the box office. There's so many movies that are made that are flop franchises. Like Warner Brothers can't get DC out of its own way since The Dark Knight and Batman. They can't make the money they want. They get Star Wars, and that's a $1 billion project like that. Marvel, the Infinity stuff, $1 billion, just like that. Now, like, oh yeah, you guys screwed up X-Men, another $1 billion, we could fix that. Like, they've become, as
the Atlantic Magazine said, the Death Star of TV. They are now the biggest planet in the solar system. By the way, the acquisition also reunited the Star Wars franchise, because Fox owned episode four, the first Star Wars movie. And they owned some Marvel assets that...
They did a deal with Marvel before Marvel mattered all that much in movies, which is why they had a bunch of those X-Men.
So how long before we see Hulk in the Millennium Falcon with Chewie together at last?
On the Planet of the Apes.
On the planet... Why not just put it all together? I think they... I figure Disney will. Clearly, we're going to see a new Star Wars movie every single year forever.
The theme parks will have all these new franchises in them.
I have a lot of faith in Disney's ability to destroy the Star Wars franchise.
Have you seen The Last Jedi yet? Now, no spoilers. I promise anybody watching, we're not going to tell you anything.
I haven't. I'm going to wait till I don't have to be in a theater with lots of people
talking
on their phones. Yeah. No, I won't wait for cable, but it's...
They're not in a theater on their phones. They're nerds. They're fans. They're all looking at the screen and,
That's true. There was nobody on the phone. Although, when we saw it Thursday at 6 p.m., we saw the first public showing in Petaluma, and the projector died about 10 minutes into it.
What?
Yeah, ooh, that was a bad moment. If I'd been the theater manager, I would have been very afraid. It was kind of funny because we're sitting in the back row, so I can look in through the window, and so I'm looking at the projector, and it's a computer, right? It's they get the movie on a hard drive, they plug the hard drive into the Christie projector. It's a DLP projector, and it's basically a giant, like a 2 refrigerator size computer with a projector on, and a big stovepipe coming off it to get the heat off. And so she's wearing this nice little blazer, you know. She goes in and she's opening the door, and you could tell she's like, I don't know. And then I really started to worry because she got on the phone. So I figured she's talking like to the tech support guy in Dallas. And it just went off. I don't know. So I thought we're going home. We're not going to see the rest of this movie. But they rebooted it and they started the movie over. So we got to see the first 10 minutes twice. But what was interesting is this is a weird crowd. This is a crowd of paid extras to see the first public showing. While the theater is dark, some guy had on his an Android phone with a Pico projector, and he had episodes, the last Star Wars, on it, and he was projecting The Force Awakens on the screen, like this big. It was like, and people are cheering and they're watching it. You know, he put it up there, and there's the crawl, right? Episode 7, and it was.
Super nerds.
That's nerds. So they weren't on the phone. They were really. Then it started up. We watched the whole first 10 minutes again. And then it died again about halfway through. Oh, my God.
So, Lee, I got a question about Disney's clearly going to start its own streaming service.
Yep.
CBS decided that apparently the best way to get people to sign up for theirs was to do this new Star Trek series available only on streaming.
Is this the Tarantino one? No?
No, it's a new Star Trek.
Discovery. Yeah.
And I just wonder, so at what point are people going to say
it's too fragmented?
Yeah, right. I'm going to subscribe to 400 different things at $20 a month each or $10. Yeah.
You're going to replace your $200 cable bill, which is also already crazy, with a $60 internet bill plus 20, you're right, 25, 15, $12 subscriptions, whatever. I just got to notice Netflix has gone up to 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What am I saying? The Comcast will save us. They'll just
There you go.
Take it all away.
Do you want the entertainment bundle?
it'll be cable. We're gonna have cable again.
They're reinventing cable television.
Yes, interactive cable. There's going to be
Whatever happened to that?
Buy this.
Do you remember that interactive cable? That was going to be all the rage. Two-way cable?
Several times, like in the 70s and then in the early 90s.
I remember they did, I think it was Comcast did a trial in Florida where, so you had a remote and you could, the cable was two-way so you could interact. And what they found out is the only thing people did is they bought postage stamps. That was like, it was like the only service they really were interested in. It was a complete flop. There is no interactive cable, is there, in the country? We have the internet. We don't need it.
Yeah, in the old days, people thought that we would be doing all this through TV.
With a remote.
And we do it all, but we don't do it through TV.
Right.
Well, side note before we pay some bills, Uncle Leo, because we got to pay some bills.
You see the blue sheet come out, don't you? You know it.
I also want to say this is not a very positive, popular thing to say in this type of show, but that's why the real movement of the world, the only reason people buy Fire Sticks right now is because exactly what you said. They're not paying all these subscription fees and all these things. That's why we're going to talk about it later, but that's why they buy Amazon Fire Stick. The only reason anyone ever would buy an Amazon Fire Stick is because the power that it gives you of hacking it and getting everything you want for free. So, America. Go ahead and pay these bills. We'll talk about Amazon.
There's the answer to Dan's conundrum. Just become a pirate, Dan. Everything's available.
Average people are doing, and I know people that aren't computer savvy, and they're at the softball game talking about, hey, you want a Fire Stick, man? Just order one off Amazon, $40. I put it on there for $5. So, I mean, I'm like, wait, you know how to use a computer? Like, you can read? Oh, wow. Technology. Ooh, it's simple. So, I mean, average people are finding a way because they're tired of being nickel and dime by all these services.
Jailbreaking Fire Sticks.
Look at this. Installing Kodi on an Amazon Fire Stick.
Kodi, of course, right.
Yeah. Here, people are also asking, says Google, what free channels do you get with a Fire Stick? How do you download Kodi to a Fire Stick? How can you hack Fire TV? Here's a five-step hack on YouTube for...
Amazon's going to fix that fast. They're going to block it. I'll bet you block it.
It's been going on for 4 years. When are they going to block it? Like, at what point do they say, hey, we got to stop this? Oh, maybe we don't block it because we keep selling Fire Sticks. And that's the only reason people are buying a Fire Stick over a Chromecast or Apple TV or anything else that's a better device. Oh, because they can hack this. That's the reason they haven't done anything. It's been a long – Kodi's been going on for a while now, and it is on like gangbusters.
I had no idea this was going on. I've missed everything.
Yeah. I don't know if it's gotten critical mass, and certainly Amazon has its own content and has to deal with Hollywood, which if this thing got big enough, and I know Kodi's been out there, but if this got to be really big, I got a feeling Hollywood would just force them to shut it down.
Have we done a know-how yet on how to hack your Fire Stick?
the reason Amazon doesn't care because you get Amazon Prime. So when you ordered your Fire Stick, you probably got the Prime for free. So you're already paying for Amazon Video, so they don't care again because you're watching their content.
I think the FCC should step in.
Somebody should do something. I'm just telling you, like I said, when I was at a softball game, and a dude that I went to high school with, this dude, God bless him, he picks up recycling for a living. He's not a bright guy, and he's out there slanging Fire Sticks at the softball game. And I'm like,
he's selling hacked Fire Sticks at the kids' softball game?
All day he's flipping them. The dude's making $120 a week flipping Fire Sticks. And again, he's not a bright guy. You know what? You want to know how impressive they are? Go on to Let Go app, type in Fire Stick. Go on to the Facebook Marketplace and type in Fire Stick. And you will see people with stacks of 50 and 100 of them saying, preloaded, unlocked, blah, 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 $60, $80. This is an epidemic. I mean, again, you've been journalizing, okay, doing a real job. I'm living over here, and people stealing stuff land, and it is going like Donkey Kong.
I'm going to take your word for it, because this is bigger than I thought it was.
Well, I guess when people were hacking, like, the DirecTV, and they would put different cards in. Remember that? And then it was like a cat and mouse game. DirecTV would send a pulse down that would break it, and then you'd buy a new hacked card, and then you'd put it in. And eventually, the smartest thing DirecTV did is they did some sort of they sent out the patch bit by bit, and they all of a sudden they bricked everybody all at once. One evil Christmas Eve. I'm making it up. Maybe was it Christmas Eve? It feels like it should have been. They just broke everybody's DirecTV. You know, hacked DirecTV.
But go look on any open market and see how many are stacked up for sale.
No, I'm looking. It's incredible. What should I pay for this, though? I mean, they range in price from
$60 is the good price. $80, somebody's ripping you off.
Here's a $37 one.
Remember the old school Apple TV, the big one with the hard drive?
Yeah.
Those two were popular.
People put Boxy on that, which is sort of sounds like a very early version of what this is.
It is, exactly. I remember actually hacking the Apple TV. Yeah, and then eventually.
But now it's so easy, anybody could do it. You can learn again in 3 minutes.
Even this YouTube guy, who is not a bright guy, I hear.
He's not a bright. I'm not going to say his name because that's insulting. But when I say not a bright guy, that's me being kind. And again, he's just selling it,
What if he's listening?
He's not that bright. He's not listening. I have no fear in my life of him listening to any episode.
Let me ask you, because this is a measure that we used to use. What's the tooth to mouth ratio? Does he have all his teeth?
Oh, he works for the state. He's got all his teeth. He's got good insurance.
Oh, he's got good. He's got good teeth.
Yeah, he picks up blue bins of recycling and puts them in a truck. That's
he works for the state. Oh, he's got a great. He's a union job. Yeah.
This is
a little side business.
All right, dropping them off in the recycling bins to people going by their house. Hey, I can get your free TV. You want CBS Discovery? I got you.
This actually was prosecuted in England, not here, but in England. The judge said he let him off. He avoided prison, the Cody Box seller, but the judge said others may not be so lucky. So, you know, I'm just saying.
Remember the old days where you would get like a pirate cable box and plug it into whatever cable company you had in 1983?
I'm learning so much on this show. I can't wait to go home and I have a Fire Stick. Just I never opened it. Now I know what to do with it.
A whole new world, 1,000 channels just for you.
Can Amazon? I mean, they could push out an update that would change the fix this.
Again. Why would they? It's the only reason people buy this device. Go ahead and read the blue sheet. We got stuff to do.
However, I did buy an Amazon a Kindle Fire because I wanted to put a different operating system on it, and they broke that in a hurry.
Oh yeah, I'm just wondering if Amazon sells hacked Fire Sticks. Because that would be a really interesting kind of. Let me see if they just search for hacked Fire Stick on Amazon. Wouldn't that be funny if they
search for like Amazon Cody Fire Stick?
Oh yeah, Cody. Because that's the key word, Cody, because he doesn't come with Cody. And Cody, by the way, is completely legitimate. Yeah, but they do sell a Kindle edition book. Learn how to install Cody on Fire Stick.
If you're not too bright,
there's actually so many books. Cody on Fire Stick. Look at all these. There's a ton of books.
And you don't even. The best part is you don't even have to buy a book. It's on YouTube for free. You can watch how to do it again because this guy's not ready. Probably couldn't read the book. He's like, I see image. I copy image. I type in the code. It works.
There's the bestseller.
Amazing.
Here's the bestseller.
Kindle Unlimited.
Kindle Unlimited. I already get that, so it's free for Kindle Unlimited. Thank you, Amazon, making it easy. You know, Owen, I'm starting to believe your conspiracy theory that Amazon is.
Like I said, you guys live in a world of smart people and the bubble and life. I'm out here with Joe Schmo. I know how stuff gets down. Can we get to this ring? It's very important to me, Leo.
I'm wearing it right now. This is it. This is the Motive ring. I love this thing. So you've all worn, you know, fitness bands and so forth. Well, as technology has advanced, it's possible now to put all of the functionality of a fitness band into a ring, the Motive ring. In fact, this is kind of better than the average fitness band. It's got heart rate, It connects with your phone wirelessly over Bluetooth. You're going to love the fact that the charge lasts 3 days, and it's got 2 days of onboard memory, so you don't have to have your phone to sync. It'll sync automatically with the Motive Ring. And actually, I should launch the Motive software because you can find out so much about what you're doing, about what's going on. This is so awesome. M-O-T-I-V. And I love the sleep tracker functionality because, frankly, I don't want to wear a watch to bed, right? That's uncomfortable. A ring, not such a big deal. So you can see how you've slept. You could see when you've been active. You could see if you've been good or not. No, that's Santa Claus. That's something else. No active minutes, no active minutes. Oh, there. Whew. Active minutes, 94 active minutes. I walked 7 miles that day. Look at that, 40. And then I slept, but I only slept for 5 hours, 22 minutes. You could see your sleep. You could see your sleep trend, my seven-day sleep trend. All of this, 81% restful sleep, 1 hour restless. Boy, do I know about that. Restless sleep. This is awesome. Unlike a bulky wristband, it's just 0.1 inches thick. It weighs almost nothing. It's very light. You can get it. See the two colors. I have the black one, a slate gray, they call it, and there's a rose gold one. Waterproof. I wear it in the shower. No big deal. It's made of ultralight titanium. It's actually waterproof up to 5 atmospheres. What is that? That's like pretty deep. That's like 100 feet deep. That's very deep. So you can wear it all the time. It's very comfortable. They actually, when you order it, they'll send you a ring sizing kit. So you can try on a range of sizes and pick the size that's right for you. I got it just right. According to the American Heart Association, I hate it, bad news for you. We adults, we need about 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity aerobic activity to maintain good health. The Motive Ring makes it really easy. This would be great for your New Year resolution to get in shape, to take care of yourself. And it gives you, it charges. See how that, it's so cool. I go back a little bit on the charge. So it's got a little USB dongle. You get two of them. You put it in, I have one plugged into a USB plug, but you can also plug it into your computer. And then you just charge it up. It's got a little magnetic thing. It charges really fast. So basically, I charge it every morning when I get up after I measure my sleep. I get up. When I get in the shower, I put on the charger. It's fully charged by the time my shower is done. And now I got, another 2 days or 3 days to go. But if I just kind of top it off every day, that works great. We've got $20 off your first order. I've been wearing this now for a month. I love this thing. It's the activity tracker that's always on and always on you. Visit mymotiv.com, M-Y-M-O-T-I-V.com, and enter TWIT at checkout to get $20 off. Mymotiv.com, promo code TWIT. And I think it looks kind of jazzy, kind of nice. Megan has the rose gold. That's also very pretty. Very nice holiday gift. Yes.
If you don't buy me one for Christmas, I think I might buy one. The best thing you said with that was the sleep tracking, because yep, you're right. I've had Fitbit to my Apple Watch, and I always take them off because they just,
I don't want to wear those to bed.
My sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
But a ring, I would think that would be like great, because, if you get the right size, it feels good. You won't even notice.
You don't notice.
People sleep with rings on all the time.
You don't notice it. It's really
cool. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you for that vote of support. We could probably get one sent out to you, Owen. I'll talk to the people. You want rose gold? Oh, I got to get your size and all that. Lisa will email you.
All right.
And I'll send you a Kodi Fire Stick, too. Oh, no, actually, you got the...
I'll send you a
And Kodi I am Fire not a bright Stick. Guy. I'm just going to say.
Look, I wish you would know this guy. I'm about to just, videotape a conversation with him and send it to you personally.
Would you
so
post
you understand
it?
What I'm saying, because I'm trying to be kind by saying that.
Is he like crazy Guggenheim? Like, hey, yo, doctor. How you doing?
He is a beer-drinking, good old boy... just sports guy. And, he's the kind of parent that wants to kill other people's kids. Like, I'm like, they're kids, bro. Calm down. So he's just a very interesting guy. Nice guy. Sweet guy. Slanging Cody's. It's the American way. Side business.
You seen the Last Jedi? What is the movie? The Jedi?
I did see it. I saw it opening night without my child because I'm a horrible parent.
Oh, you are a horrible parent. Do you like it?
It's a great movie. It's a good Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I kind of say that, too.
They messed with some of my Star Wars stuff that, as a purist, I find a huge problem with. And I'll tell you one thing that's not a spoiler, but it's just one statement. The girl said, Godspeed. And I said, wait, aren't we supposed to say, may the force be with you? Who's talking about God? There's no God. It's the force. It's the dark side.
There were some... There were some script lines in the script that I feel like Rian Johnson maybe isn't the best writer ever.
And I was just like, what's going on?
The funniest line to me, and this is not a spoiler. I promise you, we're not spoiling anything. But listen, when you watch the movie, listen for this line. To me, this went, this like landed like, the, is, I want to punch this beautiful city right in the mouth or something like that. Yeah. It was like, what the hell?
I want to punch a hole
in this beautiful city. You remember it?
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell is that? But again, great action, great stuff
you wanted to always see. There's like one scene that I'm not going to spoil. I'm not going to say nothing about it. There's one scene in this movie that you've always wanted to see anytime you ever watch Star Wars, and you get it, and it is amazing.
And did you like the diversity of the cast?
Yeah.
Well, there's an,
I mean,
that one of the heroes is Asian. Finn's back. He's black. There's the, I think the big heroes of, they're actually mostly women as the big heroes in this, right?
Women are the new wave, and that's great. Yeah. I mean, again, as far as diversity goes, when you're in outer space and you're going from multiple planets, one would hope there's diversity.
There's a lot of different looking folks.
I'm expecting to see fish people, black people, brown people.
I love the rabbi bartender. Wasn't that great? Remember that?
Yep.
No, yep. I made that up. You liar. You didn't see
it. I disagree with you. Oh, trust me. I saw it.
So what I've been playing with, and I really like, and this, we were talking about the Google phone, when they updated Android 8.1, they secretly snuck in AR stickers into the application that really, really work well. And there are a bunch of, as one would think, Star Wars tie-ins. That's a BB-8. And it really does. I mean, look, it's a simple thing. But you see this shadow on BB-8, and it does look like it's actually on the surface of the desk. There's a porg, which is kind of like a bird. Good eating, too, by the way. Mighty good eating. Look at that. It's so cute. And it's I think there's audio on this, too. I don't know if I turned it down. There's a walker. And you can make these bigger. You could actually make them giant. And they shoot and stuff. I think it's kind of fun. This is other stuff. This, I made a floaty balloon with my daughter's name on it. That's not really a balloon in that. It's not really in the space, but it looks like it, right? That's pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah. It's funny because Apple, of course, got all, there's a Stranger Things tie-in too. Apple got all the attention for AR and AR kit. Now, interestingly, Google, I think, is responding to Apple. Here's Lisa interacting with a stormtrooper. She doesn't, problem is she can't see it, so she doesn't know she's kicking it in the butt. He's not gonna be happy about that. But isn't it? I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. A lot of fun to play with. Let me see if I have some more. No, I don't. That's the Google AR stickers that come with the new Google camera. Actually, I think. Do I have the?
I'm waiting for my new Pixel to come. I'm trying with all my heart to switch over from Apple.
This will do it for you.
I got my Pixel, and then something was wrong with the microphone.
Oh.
So I had to send it back, so I'm waiting for them to send me another one. Like, I switched out my MacBook Pro, and I am now on an HP Spectre, and it's maxed out, and I think it's beautiful. And
isn't that HP Spectre gorgeous? That's a really thin one, right?
Yes.
I love that laptop. I have last year's.
16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
It's
why get
it's
a MacBook?
Banging Olufsen speakers. The speakers are actually really nice on this thing, too, for a laptop that's this thin. I'm thoroughly impressed with it and happy. I built a tower in the middle of the summer. I think I told you.
Wow, so you're kind of dialed out of Apple, huh?
Yeah. Yep. The only thing I got left to get rid of is my my Mac Mini, and then I'll be good.
Apple.
I'm good. I still got to keep my iPad though.
Apple hasn't updated that Mac Mini in like 4 years. It's so
no.
Sad. That's a great computer. I wish Apple would. They don't really seem to be very interested in Macintosh anymore, I have to say. Despite this Mac Pro. So Google, I think, is having such success with this kind of poor man's AR, much like ARKit on Apple. They created, kind of in response, I think, to ARKit, AR Core. They had a much more sophisticated hardware-based augmented reality system called Tango. Nobody adopted it. There were only a couple of Tango phones. And now Google's actually shutting it down.
And they had been working in it for years and just... We did a story just, I think, a couple of months ago based on some demos we got of the hardware that supported Tango. So it seems a little bit sudden that they've essentially shifted to doing something far more comparable to what Apple has been doing, which does not involve a lot of dedicated, specialized hardware.
It's just software. And it is about as good as Apple's AR kit stuff. Stuff doesn't quite hit the, you know, solidly hit the table. There is shadow, but it's. I think the point is it's good enough. And I think what Google realized is nobody wants to buy a bigger, heavier, more expensive phone with Tango hardware in it when just doing it in software with the existing cameras is good enough for a lot.
Tango came out of the same era as Project Aura, which were right. The smartphones that were little modules you could piece together to design your own phone, which they also killed this year.
I thought that was really cool. I was like one of the only people that liked that. Every time I try to talk to somebody about it, they're like, that's a horrible thing. I'm like, I just want to see it. I mean, I don't know if what I'd do with it, but it looked like it was cool. Like, you know, like Lego phone accessory stuff.
I love the idea.
You know what's depressing? Yeah. If you go to the Tango site, get.google.com/Tango, you get a 404. They didn't even, they just like took it down. And then March 1st of 2018, it'll be dead. But come on, Google, put just a little thing that says, oh, thanks for coming. Glad you enjoyed it. But we're not going to do this anymore. But instead, no, just 404. And this is, by the way, the number one search result I get when I search for Google Tango. It's a non-existent Google website. Oh, my God. This is what Google's got to be careful. They're really getting a reputation for just abruptly killing technologies. And I think what happens is that people then just don't invest in any Google technologies because they go, well, I don't know how long this is going to last. When do they get tired of this one? They've done it again. You want to see the top search trends of 2017? This is the most depressing video ever. Thank you, Google, for making me sad. I'm going to have to walk you through it because it's just music. This year, more than ever, we asked, here's the things we searched for, how wildfires start. Oh, boy. How far can North Korean missiles go? Oh, boy. How much will the wall cost? Jeez Louise. How many refugees in the world? Google, how do hurricanes form? How are babby made? How to board up a window? Oh, how to calm a dog during a storm? How to help flooded victims? How to help refugees? This is going to get happier, right? How to help Puerto Rico? How to help Mexico? How to help Las Vegas? How to help Grenfell Tower, Rohingya, Syria, Somalia? Oh, man. How to make a protest sign? Jeez Louise.
I mean, I'm gonna ask the question. I didn't see how to put Cody on Amazon Fire. So I don't know if I really believe this list per se. I mean, not to bring
is
a call
it the number
back
one?
On
is
something
it?
Serious.
I mean, Google's gonna I'm say, just, look, it was depressing here. Yeah. We just have to tell the truth. Yeah. Oh, here's some positives. I'm how to watch the eclipse. There you go.
Okay, here we go. Here
that
we
was
go.
Good. How not to buy glasses that'll blind you on Amazon. How to make? No, they didn't. How to make it? Yeah, how to make a difference. How to take a knee. How to be a strong woman, Ellen. These are all the Me Too. How to be a good parent. Aww.
People Google that?
No. And if you do, I think you maybe should reconsider this whole child thing. Okay, hey, Google, so how do I be a good parent? Because I got a kid on the way. How to be fearless.
So this isn't a real list then. This is them just doing stuff.
Understand. I don't know. Oh, now Google's responding with the Google Max. I don't know. Are you uplifted by this? Depressed by this? I don't know.
It's an interesting challenge if they found out that's what they had to
right.
make exciting and inspiring rather than depressing.
The final search, how to move forward. This is almost political. It's really close to a political
I
statement.
I thought it was going to be like all Taylor Swift.
I think that's the truth.
See, that would have been more accurate. I'm looking for stuff like that. Like, this whole thing is just a propaganda, whatever you want to call it. Oh, we're people that care about people, and people wanted to know how to help everybody. And these, okay. Just tell me you're making a commercial, and I'll be fine with that. But don't tell me this was the most searched stuff in 2017.
This was weird. The year, in many ways, that Silicon Valley and Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Amazon, people soured a little bit, right? So, in fact, Aaron Griffith has a good article about this. Silicon Valley isn't the kind of the hope of the world anymore. Do you agree, Dan?
Hasn't been for a long time. And The difference, I think, this year is that Silicon Valley is starting to be like the Wall Street in 2009.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
And that's I didn't think it was going to get this far because I didn't really think that the tech people had quite the 10 ears that they proved to have at this point. But I think they finally know they have a problem and hopefully will start working on it more seriously. It's been depressing.
When this article was first published on Back Channel, Wired's Back Channel, the title was "Techies Still Think They're the Good Guys. They're Not." But I note that it has now changed to "The Other Tech Bubble." Do you think people were like pissed off that she said that? I don't know. But I think the message is clear. What happened this year was it the unicorns? Was it Uber?
I think it was a combination of things. I mean, certainly Uber
didn't
is
help.
Part of it.
Yeah.
But there's a general awareness that social networks have played an incredibly culpable role in the kind of degrading of everything in our conversations, in our politics, in our the way we relate to each other, as well as doing lots of great stuff. And I think that the response until recently had been, well, it really wasn't us, and we can't do anything about it. And I would say also we got to be careful that we get what we ask for if we really want them to be the editors of the internet. I don't. But there's this general sense that the tech business, partly because it's so damn rich, and a lot of people throughout this country and the world are starting to feel there's something that the power is a little too great.
I think you're right. It started in Silicon Valley in 2016. Remember in San Francisco, people egging the Google bus, protesting outside Kevin Rose's apartment, blaming him for what was happening.
I was about to say, this has been, again, when you live outside of it, it's been a long time coming that this has been going on. People have been upset with the Valley and tech bros for a long time. But when you're that rich, you're above it and you think that you are the good guys, but you're not. Average people can't afford to live, and they're living in a shack to serve you a burrito because they didn't learn code, and you're moving them out of their apartments so that you can have some kid come in and do whatever you want them to do and make stuff that doesn't make any sense. I hope you get acquired. I mean, it's really a weird thing. You got bodegas and companies coming out just doing dumb stuff, paying horrible PR people. So, yeah, it's great to live on an island where you think that you're the coolest person in the world and people are giving you money for your idea, and maybe you make it, maybe you don't. But it's not a reflection of the country. And as far as the internet being the facilitators for negative connotations and conversations, guess what? There was a guy, forget the baseball game, but the guy blew the call. He got 10,000 letters in the first week, 100,000 letters in his lifetime about how he messed this up. People have always been ignorant and rude. They just had to put a stamp on it. Now they can just click and
it's
do
too
it.
Too easy.
Okay? The world is full of the worst people in the world and the best people in the world. It's a good...
Unfortunately, you hear a lot more from the worst people.
I hope it's a 60-40 ratio, because I know that there's 10% of the good people just sitting there like, look, I don't even want to be bothered with that. But I mean, the world's always been a good and a bad place. The internet just lets you see it if that's what you choose to see, more so than not. But, you know, people are generally inherently good, and hopefully things work out. And
the bad news for Uber, which really kind of started in the spring with the Susan Fowler blog post that brought down Travis Kalanick, continues. In the Waymo Uber case, a letter has been revealed now. By the way, a letter which came from an Uber employee who has backed down a little bit on some of the claims in actual court testimony. But the former security employee at Uber said in his letter, this is the kind of thing that was going on. This comes from Amir Afradi at The Information. This is his post. Unlawfully recording an employee conference call that was supposed to be part of Uber's anonymous and candid listening sessions after the company was accused of sexual harassment by Susan Fowler. Hiring CIA-trained operatives for things like recruiting someone on the senior leadership team of a rival to be Uber's spy. They were trying to turn executives from other companies, plus recruiting other informants who worked at Rivals. Uber spoofing rider and driver accounts to gather data on Rivals. Collecting detailed information about people who drove for Rivals. If you drove for Lyft, Uber knew more about you probably than its own drivers. And 35,000 taxi driver records by hacking or outsmarting software meant to prevent automated downloading of website information. Uber virtually impersonated protesters and taxi operators in order to gather data about politicians, regulators, law enforcement, taxi companies, and other possible enemies. Sometimes, by getting invited to their private WhatsApp and Facebook groups, it conducted physical eavesdropping to that effect, too. In one case, putting a bug at a transport regulator meeting so they could listen in. There were allegations of hacking, but those details were redacted. Spying on rival executives in private hotel and conference spaces in order to record their reaction to news. I mean, Uber was acting abominably, not just towards its own employees, its female employees, but towards the outside world. We know about Grayball, right? Their software that would automatically detect if a rival or a law, more importantly, a law enforcement officer was trying to get an Uber.
Yeah, Leo, I can't wait.
Go ahead, Dan.
I'm as far from being a fan of Uber as you can possibly get, but that letter is a bunch of allegations.
Okay, good
that
point.
Not a single one of which I'm aware of anyway that has been shown to be true. Maybe they're all true, or maybe none of them are true, or maybe a couple of them are. I'm really wary of making any assumptions
Dan.
Particular thing.
Good point.
Because, I mean, I'm one of these people who kind of tends to want to believe the worst about Uber, which is why I'm really careful in this case to say, well, I got to see some evidence first.
Yeah. The letter was written by the attorney of a former Uber security employee, Richard Jacobs, and was sent to Uber's general counsel, Angela Padilla, after he left the company, and it showed up as part of the discovery during the trial. You can read the letter if you want. Recode has it. But that's a very important caution, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Dan. This is just one person's allegations.
That's why I said it sounded like a Lifetime movie. I'm like, I'm listening. I remember reading. I'm like, man, this is a lot. Like, this is like this. All this? Really? All this? Like, it was that was extreme. So I am fully backing the whole cautionary tale of let's see some evidence or proof of something, because that was
yeah. But you kind of come on.
You
kind of believe
like
it
right because it's
I don't want to believe it, but I just kind of believe it because of the stuff we already know. It just doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, but some of that, I'm like, you hired us. Like, so basically, you're out here torturing dudes from other companies trying to get. You're hiring CIA ex. I mean, come on, that's a lot. That's a lot. I don't know how much of that I believe. I need to see some evidence. Somebody somewhere has got something to prove something.
All right, let's take a little break. When we come back, Facebook admits it's bad for your health. That's next. But film at 11. But before we do that, I'd like to show you a little film. You know, we make little films about the week. So, you know, it's like for training, we go in the locker room, we watch the films, we review them, and we thought we'd share them with you. This is what you missed if you missed anything this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
Hi, Mom. We did a fun thing. I think I've mentioned this before. We were making pasta one day in the kitchen.
No, I'm telling that.
Am I allowed to do that on the show? I'm going to start trying that.
That's the magic.
This week in computer hardware.
The Titan V, the world's first consumer Volta GPU with HBM2, $2,999. They call it a consumer graphics card, but this is like calling a Lamborghini a commuter vehicle.
It's a super impressive looking card, but at $3,000, you need to have a business reason to really want this.
Know-how.
It's cheaper than the
this
iMac
is the Spire,
Pro.
Which is a very cool device, about $350.
This has kind of been my recording studio for the past month. It's basically like an 8-track recording studio.
Oh, sugar. Oh, honey.
This makes it seem so simple.
I mean, you still have to have the talent, but wow.
Twit. Technology for your eyes and ear holes.
They have to let you visit.
She's talking about the drop-in feature, which lets...
Yes, I'm talking about it. Leo, you're scolding
my mom.
Me.
Okay, my mom. I got scolded this week. That's all.
The tool you're mom. Using is called drop-in.
You're going to visit.
Okay.
By the way, my mom has come up with the perfect... You know, we always have this problem by saying the A word, the trigger word for the Amazon's Echo. So she said, well, I just call it hoo-hoo. So from now on, if I say hoo-hoo, that's the Amazon trigger. I wish I could make an Echo answer to that. That would be awesome. Hoo-hoo, set a timer. Okay. my mom.
That was actually a great episode. I got tagged in that. The reason I knew someone said, this is the most fun I've seen with Leo since an episode of O Doctor. And I'm like, oh, his mom? And I went and watched that. Wow. I was cracking up.
Maybe we should do an O Doctor Mary Laporte episode. That would be
there
fun.
There we go.
Bring the two of you together.
We could both yell at you.
I don't know if the world is ready for that much awesomeness on one TV screen.
Your mom seems like a lovely individual. It was really fun to watch.
Yeah. She's a star. All of a sudden now, people are demanding. You know, they're hating me on Twitter, but they love my mom.
Yeah, because she puts you in your place, no doubt. You can't. Yeah. You think you run the ship? Oh, you don't run.
Our show today brought to you by my doorbell. I love my Ring Video doorbell. We've had it for almost 2 years now, and I couldn't live without it because, well, I use it in a lot of different ways. When neighbors come over. And the doorbell rings, and I quickly pull out my phone. I hear it on my phone, which is great. The doorbell pairs to the Wi-Fi. And I say, oh, let's see who that is. Actually, there's somebody at my door right now. Oh, I don't want – and I don't answer. I admit it. It keeps you from answering the door when you don't want to. Even if you're not home, you get this – I just got one just a minute ago, the Ring doorbell. Somebody's at our front door. It has motion sensor in it, so it sees people even before they ring the doorbell. When they ring the doorbell, it dings you, but the motion sensor can also notify you. There's an HD camera on it, a speaker so you can talk to them, and a microphone so you can hear them. So when the UPS guy comes, I say, yeah, I'm in the shower right now. I'm actually at work. This is really showing you how I use it to deceive, isn't it? It's showing you my poor morals here. I'm in the shower right now. Can you leave the package? I'll sign for it tomorrow. He does it. Plus, then I can keep an eye on the package, which is really awesome. I should show you the Twitter stream, the Ring Twitter stream, because what they've started doing, it's pretty funny, is posting videos captured by the Ring doorbell of people stealing stuff. These are all people who were arrested, by the way. They're not... This is a Ring video of a guy. This is your doorbell's doing this. Comes, he gets out of his car. This is not a bright person and gets back in the car, and we've got clear video. So we got him. People trying to break in at night. This is safety for your home. The Ring video doorbell. Now with a Ring floodlight cam, you've got the same safety all around your house. It's a motion activated camera and LED floodlight that connects to your phone with HD video, two-way audio. If somebody steps on your property, the lights come on, you see it, and if you want, you can talk to them. You can say, hey, dude, get out of here. And if they don't respond, it even has a 110-decibel alarm you could fire from your phone no matter where you are, anywhere in the world. Wall Street Journal said it was the best of CES this year. The Ring floodlight cam, the Ring video doorbell. You can get a Ring of Security kit right now and save up to $150 on it if you go to ring.com/twit. All the kits include a doorbell and the choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams. By the way, you can connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs if you want to have added convenience, monitoring, and security. You don't have to, but you can. With Ring, you're always home no matter where you are. Save up to $150 on a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/twit. That's ring.com/twit. I love this Twitter feed because it's just a bunch of people. Here's a guy. He runs into the garage, steals everything, opens the garage door, runs out. They got him. Oh, this is a floodlight cam shot. I love it. This guy installed it 2 weeks earlier. He got the video. Facebook did an interesting thing here. This is a post from this week. David Ginsberg, director of research at Facebook. Moira Burke, research scientist at Facebook. Hard questions. Is spending time on social media bad for us? give you the TLDR. Yes.
But this is stunning that Facebook admits it. But if you keep reading, you'll see why. The bad. In general, it says, when people spend a lot of time passively consuming, by the way, that's in bold, information, reading, but not interacting with people, they report feeling worse afterwards. They quote a number of studies, University of Michigan, UC San Diego, and Yale. People who clicked on about four times as many links as the average person or liked twice as many posts on Facebook reported worse mental health than average in a survey. But here's the good news, and Facebook would like you to focus on this. On the other hand, actively interacting with people, especially sharing messages, posts, and comments with close friends, reminiscing about past interactions, is linked to improvements in well-being. So stop being such a passive consumer on Facebook and start sharing. You'll feel better. By the way, simply broadcasting status updates was not enough. People had to interact one-on-one with others in their network.
Here's a pro tip for Joy. When you're scrolling down Facebook and you see somebody post a picture with their kid or their wife, or they update their picture, always click the like button. Just always click it every time you see it, no matter what it is.
Oh, that's
if
a good idea.
You see like a family
people
image.
People like that.
I always support.
Makes
like you know, I haven't talked to somebody in 5 years. Yeah. They put up a picture of their kid. Hey, click. Hey, that's good. That's nice. Hey, thanks for look. Something positive in your mind to do while you're scrolling. It costs you nothing for the like. It makes them feel good that somebody's enjoying their family. So whatever you see family stuff, you're already scrolling anyway. Just click the button and keep it moving. Oh, then you did something positive in your mindset for the day. Just do it.
Here's some more results. Experiment at Cornell. Stressed college students randomly assigned to scroll through Facebook, either their Facebook profile or a stranger's Facebook profile. People who looked at their own profile felt much better, experienced boosts in self-affirmation compared to people who looked at a stranger's profile. Here's another one. Cornell researchers put other students under stress by giving them negative feedback on a test, then gave them a choice of websites to visit, including Facebook, YouTube, online music, and online video games. Stressed students were twice as likely to choose Facebook to make themselves feel better. Isn't that a nice story?
I mean, we were talking about why this has not been a great year for the tech industry. And I think
stuff like this.
Well, I mean, the year kind of started out with Mark Zuckerberg saying that he thought it was crazy for anybody to think that Facebook had any impact on the election, and whether it did or did not have any impact on the election, saying that he thought it was crazy was so dismissive. And I think Facebook is still kind of wandering around trying to get a sense of how to talk to the world about Facebook's impact on the world. And in this case, they're overcompensating by acknowledging that maybe Facebook is not entirely a good thing, and it's not
but
all
it's
your
how you use it, right? And of course, it's in Facebook's interest that you share more on Facebook, obviously.
I should say, most of the interaction I see between people on my Facebook is positive. There's also a fair amount of negative interaction where people are interacting with each other to fight.
Oh, yeah.
And
I see a lot of
unpleasant
fights.
Things to each other. And
But my feed and your feed are very different. No two feeds are alike, right?
Mine is mostly a good place.
Is that because of who you followed, or I guess it is?
I'm not entirely sure. My Twitter is also primarily a nice place.
But now, Twitter, you can say, clearly it's because of who you follow, because it's less algorithmic. But Facebook, you don't really know. Facebook's got an algorithm. You don't know why Facebook's showing you what they're showing you, and it may not have anything to do with who you follow.
And most of the negativity is political in nature, and people gathering together and having a reasoned conversation about their differences, but screaming bloody murder at each other.
Facebook suggests...
Hit the snooze button.
Hit the snooze button. Today we launched Snooze, which gives people the option to hide a person, page, or group for 30 days. You don't unfollow them, you don't unfriend them, and I presume they don't know you're snoozing them. Hit the snooze button. Millions of people break up on Facebook each week.
Millions?
Millions. I think it's probably more than that. They've got 2 billion users. It's probably hundreds of millions. Anyway, changing their relationship status from in a relationship to single. Research on people's experiences after breakups suggests that online and offline contact, including seeing an ex-partner's activities, can make emotional recovery more difficult. So there's a new tool called Take a Break, which gives people more control over when they see their ex on Facebook, what their ex can see, and who can see their past posts.
This is an effort from Facebook to make sure you don't delete your account. That's all this is. Hey, I know you're upset right now. Relax. Just snooze them. Don't snooze them. You can snooze them. Okay, now back away. Bring the app back up. Okay, we cool? Okay, good. You're good. It's basically just a mechanism to make sure that people don't rage quit Facebook. And that's why they instituted this. Because, again, Facebook shows you who they want or think you want to see. I've got thousands of people I follow. I only see 32 people every single day. And every once in a blue moon, somebody else cracks the surface. I'm like, oh, you're not dead? Wow, that's cool. So Facebook is just doing this so you don't rage quit them.
Roland in our chat room quotes Bishop Barclay. He says, if everybody snoozes everybody else, does Facebook disappear?
I don't think it's obviously great, by the way, if looking at my own Facebook makes me feel great, because some of the efforts Facebook goes through to make me feel great are so incredibly artificial. Like,
all those videos they send you.
Do you guys get egged on to wish happy? Ugh. Every week, Facebook takes a more active role in telling me to wish my friends a happy birthday. For a while, they were even auto-filling out the sentiments I could send my friends on their birthdays.
It's hard for me this year has been tough, but start thinking of Facebook as, frankly, a malign influence on our society.
And there
I don't see any benefit.
There is actual good stuff for me on Facebook, too. There are instances of my friends being nice to me in a way, which I am fairly sure was not manufactured by Facebook.
I like your stuff. But, I mean, wouldn't it be better to call them and maybe go have a drink together? Or I just feel like that it's so it's such an artificial environment. And who's going to defend Facebook? Anybody want to defend Facebook? Say, I get so much value out of it. And
I think Facebook at its best is everything they say about Facebook being good is true in some cases. I think in some cases it is a profoundly good thing.
Has it changed the world in a positive way?
It has, because it's opened up windows and avenues for people that never had an opportunity to see the world, reach the world, view the world. They're building space planes to bring internet to underdeveloped countries. There are a lot of positive things to talk about. At the end of the day, it comes down to the individual, okay? First things first, when I was in the hospital, you know, again, my phone was dying. So I posted on Instagram, like, hey, because I was sick all day. I was like, anybody's looking for me, my phone's dead, but I'm here. You know, and people knew where I was and they knew what was going on. So people weren't worried about me when I disappeared for a day and a half.
That's a good use.
So, and secondly, again, it goes down to personal usage. My daughter comes to me and she says, Dad, how do I make a new Instagram name? And I said, why do you want to do that? She said, well, all my friends did it. I said, well, why did your friends do it? Oh, they wanted to do a thing so they could get more followers and they think they need to change their name. And I said, well, if you change your name, you're putting up the same content. Do you think it's going to do any better for you just because you have a name change? She's like, no. I said, wouldn't you want to just change your content on the name you have and grow that following? She said, yes. And so she didn't change her name. These are conversations that I have with my child when she talks to her friends and says, it's not about how many likes you get. It's about what you put up and if you had fun and you liked it yourself. Why? Because I've taught that to her and I've instilled that in her, to which she in turn instills into her other friends. So as people, we need to do better with the technology and the devices we have. So that's that in my perspective.
All right. Enough said. Twitter has announced support for threading in tweets. Now you can really do tweet storms better. I don't know if that's a good thing. I have to say, we were all very worried about 280 character tweets, and that's turned out to be great. Yes? Yeah.
Yep.
People aren't over tweeting. They're still trying to be concise. But when you need a little extra to say something, instead of crazy abbreviations and kind of cryptic hashtags, you can say it. You disagree? You think you'd rather see short Twitter back?
I think I like short Twitter. I think the spirit of 140 should live on. At first, I was only going to do 140. Then I realized that because they don't give you a count but show that little circle, it's very hard.
You can't tell.
Actually stick to that.
You can't tell.
I have tried to make the little circle go no further than roughly the bottom point.
Did you succeed?
And with for the most part, yeah.
With this I think be as concise as you need, but you've got a little more room. Be as concise as you can, but use the space you need if you need it.
I've been accidentally tweet storming because it's very easily to accidentally append
Show me how that works, because I don't know. So if I make a...
When you do a tweet, there's a little plus sign which lets you do more. And some people like TweetStorm say that this is actually not good, because when you do a TweetStorm the old way, people start to respond to you. And by the time you finish your TweetStorm, you've taken into consideration other Twitter users. And this thing is designed to let you compose all your tweets without seeing how people are reacting.
So did I close it prematurely?
Start a tweet.
I did. I sent a tweet. This is my first tweet. Nope.
Go back and start a new one.
Start a new tweet. Okay.
Say something.
This is my second.
Okay. And there's a little plus sign next to your tweet button.
And now I can do more. Add another tweet. This is the third tweet.
And you can just keep on doing that.
Magic.
It's a way to queue up a bunch of tweets.
Oops, and I pressed send. I got to stop pressing send.
You do. You really
do. Oh, man. Okay. So you could, how many can you do? Is there a limit?
I believe there's no limit.
I'm not a fan of the tweet storm. In fact, what I feel like these days, people, instead of writing a blog post, they'll tweet 40 tweets. Then I have to go read them. Don't you hate that?
The other thing they did, which in some ways is better, is there's a if you're looking at a tweet, there's some part of a tweet storm. There's a link now that lets you go to the top of that thread.
That would help. At least I could read them in order.
When you're live tweeting a movie and ruining Star Wars for people, this comes in handy.
I did live tweet the projector stopping, but I didn't tell any spoilers. So you think it's a bad trend, Dan?
I was against the 280 also, and then I totally changed my mind. Sometimes it's much better to capture a little bit of nuance that's almost impossible to do in 140. I have not used this TweetStorm feature in at least the new thing, but I don't do them that often, and I completely agree with you that it's a form that should never have to have been invented. It would be better if people just do a blog post, okay, thank you, and then point to it on Twitter. I'll click. I really will.
Yeah. I do feel like the reason they're doing this, as Twitter's done with everything, the at reply, the hashtag is that's what people were doing. So they add features. I mean, they didn't have hashtags until Chris Messina did it, and it started to be adopted. They didn't have at replies. I've been tweeting long enough from where you didn't have an at reply. So all of that is response to how users use Twitter. So I guess...
Get off my lawn, Grandpa. Things have to change.
Twitter's funny, though. You got to change, obviously, but you don't want to change it too much, right? There's the strength of Twitter. There's a certain value to Twitter in it being, let Twitter be Twitter.
Have you seen our new commercial? I saw, I don't know if it's their first commercial. It's the first one I can remember, but I saw it in a commercial the other day, and it was...
A commercial for Twitter?
Yeah.
Is this the one with Chance the Rapper in it?
This is one with a guy, I think maybe his house is on fire or something. There's a guy with a blowhorn. He comes up and no, it's not on fire. The guy wants to set up a Twitter account. And
so they have had
guy walks out the window and he names himself Kenny G. And he's like, I think that's already taken or something stupid.
So this is a Twitter ad from June. Here's one hilarious new ad. Oh, it's hilarious. Oh, this is the bullhorn.
There it is. There you go.
All right. Shall we watch it? Let's watch it.
No, it's not great.
Well, too late. I like watching things. It's not great. Okay. So scary clown marionettes. House on fire. Stand this. He doesn't know what's...
1034. Where is he?
Second floor. Guy's a mess.
This doesn't make any sense.
He's trying to read Twitter.
He's trying to learn how to tweet.
Brought my own.
Kevin, I'm here to help. Don't worry, just Twitter.
But how do I even get started?
Just press the button and pick a name. Come on, Kevin, let's go Twitter.
My name's not Kevin, it's Kenny. Kenny G.
Hold on, your name is Kenny G.
Oh, the name's already taken.
Yeah, I'm less surprised than you are.
I should just quit.
How about Notorious Kenny G?
It's available. I do like that. Now it wants to know my interests. Entertainment. Comic books.
So this is directly addressed at the problem Twitter's had with onboarding.
Who doesn't love geodes?
Many, many people.
I like geodes.
Kenny, keep following.
Joe Bruin? K-pop?
Thanks for the follow.
Come on, Kenny. You wanted to come out here and follow everyone.
You can do it. Just follow all.
Oh, don't. No, Kenny. Oh.
Every one of you, this is awesome.
That's really interesting. So this is Twitter directly responding to the problems it's had with growth, right?
To be fair, the ad I saw was only like 10 seconds. I didn't see that full ad. That ad made it better. That was better.
A minute and 30. But it's about how to sign up for Twitter. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Where are we going to see it? By the way, that's
on Crackle when you're binge watching Startup season 2.
They're not buying the Super Bowl. Maybe they will. You think they'll be buying the Super Bowl for this one? The guy with the bullhorn is a comedian, Ramesh Ranganathan. I didn't know that, but so they hired a comedian to do it. Made it extra funny. There's another one you want to see?
Got another ad? What are they doing?
They're not even paying for these ads. Here's another one. Let's go Twitter Explore. Okay, this is how you explore on Twitter.
What do I do?
He's running down the
how do I explore
the road, and he's
don't worry, mate. It's just Twitter.
Guy going by in a.
Hope you don't mind the company, but obviously I don't run.
Who are you?
Same guy.
Don't worry about.
He's on one of those weird segues that doesn't have handles.
What I need you to do? Just click on the little magnifying glass thing there, Julio.
I think I can do this.
Come on, let's go exploring together.
Okay.
Your back is very sweaty, but I'm so excited about this, I'm going to ignore that.
Okay.
Yeah. You're doing really well.
Thanks, man.
Just keep scrolling. It's going to be wicked.
I feel like that might be ad-lib, right?
Whoa, Candace Parker?
It's the Explore tab.
Listen to Candace. Explore.
Astronauts. Nice.
Dude, you're into ninjas.
Yeah.
That's it. Keep exploring.
So this really, I mean,
these
are it's.
Things I like.
I like.
This is the first time I've seen a Twitter ad that actually made sense. Like, this is how you use Twitter.
You just mastered Twitter.
Yeah.
Wow, that's rad.
Yep, and they're constantly evolving.
Will this work?
Changing,
you think?
Like
you. Do you think there are people out there who don't use Twitter because they don't know how to use Twitter, and they're just dying to use Twitter, and they're gonna now?
You got to try, right? I don't know if they're going to because of this ad, but I mean, maybe somebody sees it and wants to give it a try. That's the whole point of advertising. I don't know if it's gonna work, and I'm a Twitter user, so I can't even speculate on that usage. But there is a vast difference between the average person that uses Facebook versus the average person that's on Twitter. So.
Twitter's harder to use. Here's a little tip. Maybe Twitter should make an ad on this. If you see a video with baby poop, don't click on it.
What?
Twitter baby poop video launches spam. So so it's a video that looks to be a video of a kid and I don't know what. And the dog, it says baby poops in his onesie, but dog's response leaves Millia. And then you got to click it now.
I double dare you.
No, it's a malicious app that gains access to your Twitter feed, spamming links from a viral video website. So by the way, people who got bit by this, Fox News pundit Brit Hume, New York Times literary critic Dwight Garner, at least two people who have an interest in baby poop. So here's the key, folks. If you're new to Twitter, if you've been watching the ads and you say, I want to be on Twitter. If you click on something that says now you need to connect to your Twitter account, don't.
Don't.
Simple enough. Okay. If it says this can tweet on your behalf, don't. Because it will. All right. The Mirai botnet. Man, this was a big story a year ago, October 2016. A botnet of 600,000 bots, mostly made up of commandeered, poorly secured routers and internet video cameras, IoT cameras. It turns out, I think at the time, do you remember this Mirai net? And remember, it brought down Dyn, a big internet DNS server, and brought down big chunks of the net. And I thought at the time, because it was right before the election, this is a state actor, right? Something like North Korea is doing. Now it's some guy in his Rutgers dorm room.
Some guy who apparently it was not even super sophisticated. It was just kind of clever.
Not a bright guy.
Not a bright guy. Kind of the motto of this show.
A guy who wanted to make money by helping people get rid of their Minecraft enemies.
Yeah, so I guess they're a Minecraft server. First, they started by running Minecraft servers. He was a Rutgers student and three friends. All in their 20s. And at first they were running a Minecraft server, making a little money on that. But then what they discovered was that in some of these Minecraft games, like Capture the Flag, you can win if you can get your opponent off the net. So they created a custom tool that you could rent to DDoS the guy you're playing with. And he's knocked off the net and you win, which is not very nice. not very, very cool. But then they thought they hadn't intended to bring down the internet. they thought there was a market for this DDoS for hire service called a VDOS. And I guess they were starting to make some money on this. They were renting it out. And eventually, it got bigger than they ever realized. The security industry was really not aware of the threat until mid-September. They figured out how to stitch together multiple exploits with multiple processors. So they were kind of sophisticated, right? And they got over 100,000 bots. And then from there, they went to 200,000 to 300,000 infections. And ultimately, at the end of it, it was 600,000 bots. The FBI says these kids are super smart, but they didn't do anything high level. They just had a good idea. They didn't really hack these devices. These were such poorly designed Internet of devices. They had hardwired login and password. It was easy. So they searched for them, found them, took them over. They infected devices all over the world, but particularly Brazil, Colombia, Vietnam, and China. Some of the world's top manufacturers of consumer electronics lack sufficient security practices to mitigate threats like Mirai. In other words, hardwired passwords, and they didn't have any way to update the firmware. So
I'd say it's more than some. I think it's probably almost all.
It's very common. It's
amazing.
Yeah. Mirai was an insane amount of firepower, said one security expert. It was just these kids. They even blocked or blasted Brian Krebs' blog, knocking it off for 4 days. They took down Akamai, which Krebs had been using to mitigate DDoS, one of the largest bandwidth providers on the internet. They actually had to drop Krebs' site. Remember that? Because they said, we can't afford to protect you against this. Just some guy in a Rutgers dorm room. Louise. This was unsealed during the prosecution, so the FBI caught him, and I guess they're prosecuting. But wow, that was kind of a revelation.
Can I make a request?
Yes.
After we get done talking about WordPress, can we talk about these Amazon stories, like the Target acquisition and the Google and Amazon talking about YouTube? Before we get out of here today. I'd like to hear your opinion on it.
Yes, absolutely. A couple more stories, then we will take a break. Yeah. Oh, you know what? We should take a break now, shouldn't we? We're at the 2 hour mark. Good thinking, Owen J.J. Stone. Oh, doctor.
I'm here. I'm here for you, Uncle Leo.
Always good on the timing. Our show today brought to you by WordPress, who brings you my blog, leolaporte.com. I am a big fan of WordPress. Started using it way back in the early days with Matt Mullenweg, and I ran my own WordPress server for years. I finally moved to WordPress.com because I realized, A, it was less expensive to let them do the hosting, and B, I didn't have to spend any time managing the software, patching the stuff, installing plugins. They did all the work. And I love it. Plus, with WordPress.com, you're now in a community where other WordPress.com people can follow you and share your site. It helps promote you. WordPress.com. You know, 29% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. Some of the biggest websites. You know that Facebook blog post I was just showing you? Facebook announcing, you know, it's better if you use Facebook if you share. That was on WordPress.com site. Facebook uses WordPress.com. WordPress is great, whether you're creating a personal blog, a business site. In fact, if you're in a business and you don't have a website yet, gosh, go to WordPress.com right now. You don't need experience. You don't need to hire somebody. They will guide you through the process. They've got great support people there for you 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday. They're there on weekends. They do all the technical stuff. You just put content up, choose a beautiful design. You get search engine optimization built in. You get social sharing built in, which is great. That means your readers and visitors will help promote your business, your site, by sharing it on their social stream. And when you get the business plan, you get hundreds of plugins and themes. You can even bring your own on some plans, which is very, very nice. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/twit. I'm a very proud WordPress user. I have been for, I think it's a decade now. WordPress.com/twit. Create your website, find the plan that's right for you, and save 15%. But you got to go to that page, WordPress.com/twit. NASA says
astronauts will watch The Last Jedi in space. I think that's very cool. They will be screening it at the International Space Station. Very cool. Short little snippets, snippet time. And then we'll get to your Amazon story because I know you want to do this. Patreon. We talked about Patreon and the fact that they were going to change the way fees worked on Patreon. That it was going to, they were going to charge, you know, patrons a lot to support creators. And creators were upset because they were losing patrons. Patrons are upset because when they wanted to do a small, like a $1 pledge, it would end up costing them $1.50 because Patreon was planning on sending them the fees instead of the creator. Sorry, my daughter keeps calling me. She doesn't really know my work schedule. It's okay. Well, Jack Conte, to his credit, and I think they did this because they had taken venture capital. I think they needed to get their profits up a little bit higher. Said, we messed up. We're sorry. We're not rolling out the fees change. I hope it's not too late. I think some creators did abandon the Patreon platform, and it gave YouTube, for instance, now has a subscription plan. I know that Kickstarter had rolled something out. So I think, if anything, it's going to expand the crowdfunding universe. But I like Jack and I like Patreon, and I know a lot of people who use Patreon. I hope they can weather this.
At least they listened and they did the right thing. And my only suggestion would have been, hey, why don't you should have started off with like a smaller jab to the stomach. Yeah. You don't pull an axe and stick it in somebody's back. You take a pinpoint needle and you jab them like two or three times and see if they survive before you just come out wheels and an axe trying to take somebody's head off.
Poke them slow.
That fee was extreme.
Yeah. Do you do Patreon stuff, Owen?
Yes, I do.
So,
and I've been down for the last month, so I haven't created content. I apologize to the people. I'm coming back to you in the new year. I apologize.
But you didn't hear from your donors that they were upset.
Oh, I got two or three people that are like, "Hey, bro, I can't afford it.
Can't
I'm
do
sorry.
It.
I love you." Yeah,
yeah. And I think that's permanent, right? Those people aren't going to come back, or maybe they will.
I got their email. I'm gonna email them, let them know about the world, whether they come back or not. I always tell people, if you give me something great, I always tell people time, if you're broke, just hit the subscribe button and follow me. Cause I understand people don't have money to be donating money out all the time either. So there's also free ways to support.
Yep.
And I appreciate that too.
So your story, which is kind of a surprise, Amazon is going to start selling once again, Apple TV and Google Chromecast on their site. They didn't for the longest time. It competes against Fire TV. Why? And what do you think that means, Owen?
Amazon, the same reason I want to talk about the Target deal, Amazon wants to sell everything.
Yep.
And they have something that's in direct competition with them, but it also sells like hotcakes, but it also relates to their other products. Because some of their products say, oh, we work with Google Home. And then people see that they can't buy it all there in a bundle. They might go somewhere else and buy that option as a bundle package. So they want to sell everything. They need to sell everything. So I feel like that's why they're bringing it back in-house, so they don't lose opportunities with all these smart home devices for a person that might not want Amazon, Alexa, or Echo, whatever.
Hoo-hoo.
Hoo-hoo. That's it.
Hoo-hoo.
I always stump myself because I'm trying not to say it.
Yeah.
I will bring hoo-hoo into the brain.
I don't understand why Amazon stopped selling it. I mean, certainly any retailer can choose not to sell a product.
Oh, competition. Kind of silly.
It seems silly, yeah. And
but now they have an incentive to start doing it because YouTube made it impossible for YouTube to work
on Amazon's Echo show. And that hurt us because people could watch our videos by saying, "Hoo, watch Twit live on YouTube." And you used to be able to watch the video. Now you can't. You can get the audio, but you can't watch the video. And that was a back and forth thing. Is that going to change? You think YouTube will work again with Amazon?
I mean, it sounds like Amazon tried to do something to show that they had some good faith. They wanted to work together.
I hope they do. Help work it out, guys, because I want our viewers to be able to use, not that the Echo show, there probably aren't that many.
Of course, this is all a sign that these devices are a lot less open and free than PCs or even an iPhone or iPad. The fact that YouTube can block this new class of device from displaying its content.
Yeah, remember the open internet? It was really fun.
Oh, God, it was good. Those were the days, my friends. And now, and you mentioned that this Target is buying Shipt. By the way, not the best name for a company. I'm just saying. But
remember that Kmart commercial?
I shipped my pants. Yeah.
That was great. That was I forgot all about Kmart. I went and bought something just because of that commercial. Yeah. That was like one of the greatest commercials. You ship it? I shipped the bed. You shipped the bed? Yeah, I shipped the bed.
I shipped it. But this is not that Shipt. This is a different Shipt.
No, this is not that. This is different.
S-H-I-P-T, $550 million. Recode says it's to fight back against Amazon. Owen, what are they saying? What does that mean? Do you know about Shipt? I've never heard of them.
So, again, basically, Target had issues before they... I know a lot of people that shop at Target love Target.
I love Target. I get
Target got hacked, and a lot of people jumped ship from using their card or kept them from ordering things. So they need to bolster that digital marketing and digital brand back out and offer something that's competitive. Because again, Amazon is eating the planet, and at some point, if you're a retailer, you know, Walmart's fighting back where they bought Jet 2 day shipping.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, they want to come deliver stuff to my house, which nobody's going to let them do.
Is
but
grocery
got to try and find their way to survive.
So Amazon bought Whole Foods, and Instacart, which is still independent, was the Whole Foods delivery service. Shipt was kind of the anti Instacart. They're a grocery delivery service, but it's with interesting. I don't ever, maybe because I'm in California, but Harris Teeter. I don't know that. Meijer, and Texas grocery giant HEB. So this is
none
Target.
None of which are in my area either.
Not in my area. So this gets Target into that delivery, same-day delivery thing.
And Amazon, I mean, it feels like about half the stuff I see on Amazon can now get to me same day, which was not true a year ago.
Right.
And
it's really ramping up.
And it makes it way more compelling as an alternative.
Should we as consumers, Meijer, M-E-I-J-E-R is pronounced Meijer. Should we as consumers be rooting for these other guys? Because I fear the day when Amazon literally does what you said, Owen, have a piece of every transaction online, and we have, suddenly that monopoly means we're out of control. We have no control over it.
We should certainly be rooting for competition.
We should be rooting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're secretly doing what Walmart did. I have a friend who... His family business is something benign. His family business made a fitting for pipes. They were one of only two companies in the country that made this fitting because not that many people need it, but it's an industry of their own. They make a lot of money with this. Amazon came in, bought their whole inventory. Then the next year, they bought the company, and now they work for Amazon. And now Amazon has bought the other company, and they own a monopoly on these pieces for these pipes. So they're the only people that you can get them from. And they could charge whatever they want, and they get a piece of it. And that's just one instance of a company I knew the person personally. I'm thinking, how many people are they doing that to? Because that's what Walmart does. They say, oh, mom and pop shop, you make these beads? Cool. We need 10,000 of them. Wow, I'm going to stop selling everybody else and only sell to Walmart. Then next year, Walmart's like, cool. We're going to buy all of them, and now we're only going to pay you half the price because you don't have customers anymore.
Monopoly.
Let's go.
Yep.
And it's just Amazon is just a secret beast on the globe, and they just want to nickel and dime everybody.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that will happen. Last story. I wish we had Clayton Morris here for this because Clayton, anytime he's on, he says, Leo, UFOs are real. I am not a believer. I'm not a believer.
I concur. You think that you're the only being in this universe? That's just silly, sir. Continue.
I'm not saying there's no life elsewhere in the universe. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying there's, well, anyway, it turns out the Air Force has for years had a secret program called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. It was in the DOD budget, but it was hidden dark money, $22 million over the last few years. The Defense Department never acknowledged it. It shut it down in 2012. It was Harry Reid who started it. But Harry was influenced by his billionaire entrepreneur friend, Robert Bigelow, who continues the program. Bigelow is convinced, absolutely convinced, aliens exist and that UFOs have visited the Earth. Reid, of course, is retired from Congress. He says, I'm not ashamed or embarrassed or sorry I got this thing going. I think it was one of the good things I did in my congressional service. I did something no one else has done before. He did it with Ted Stevens of The Internet is a Series of Tubes fame, the late Alaska Republican Senator, and Daniel Inouye from Hawaii, both have passed away. They had a secret meeting in which they agreed to fund this with dark money. Apparently, it's no longer funded, but the search still goes on. There is a reasonable reason, a reasonable thing, if you ask me, for the DOD to do this, because they're not necessarily asserting that it's aliens, it's flying saucers. What if it's a foreign power that has some amazing technology? We should at least investigate why Air Force pilots are seeing hyperspeed things flying around. But I think in most cases, come on, it's optical illusions. What do you think?
Yeah.
You believe in UFOs? I'm not talking about life in the universe. That's different.
There was a giant Air Force study of UFOs in the
1947.
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, it went through 47 through 69.
And
Project Blue Book.
It was an amazing thing. I know about it because my father worked on it.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was the editor of the thing.
What?
Yeah.
That's and cool.
It was this kind of survey study has been going on a long time, and doesn't bother me if people want to study these things. And I think that you might learn a lot of ancillary information about other kinds of stuff, as you point out, in the process. But, you know, why hide it?
The Project Blue Book investigated 12,000 claimed UFO sightings in its 22-year period. Pretty amazing. Your dad was the editor of that.
Of the final report, yeah.
Wow. Was he in the Air Force, or was he a journalist? What was his background?
Well, he was in the Air Force during World War II, but this was a project he took on kind of as a freelancer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did he tell you about it at the time?
Oh, yeah.
So
there was no secret.
It wasn't secret. Okay. Well, so far they haven't. Has anybody found anything? Clayton says they have, but they're not telling us.
I don't buy that. That would only be the biggest piece of news in history.
I suspect
that would have leaked. I believe there has to be life elsewhere.
Right.
And probably even in our solar system. But if they'd found life elsewhere, we'd know at this point.
I would think so.
Technically, it just could have been anything because it's just unidentified flying objects. So, I mean, somebody could have been making a drone back in the 80s and you're wondering why this light's blinking and it flew away. And so
I was just hoping that, Owen, you were going to say, yeah, I've seen one. I've been abducted. I was just hoping. I was just hoping.
Unfortunately, you know, aliens don't kidnap my people. That's not how they usually get down.
Is that actually true? That's an interesting statistic to investigate.
I can give you a whole list of things that don't happen to my people. Like, you know, like in Philly, they kidnapped this little black girl. They brought her back because you just don't kidnap black kids. It's not worth it. It's a problem. She sang Jesus song. She sung church hymns for an hour and a half, and then they just brought her back because she just kept singing these church songs. I'm sitting there like, yeah. She put the Lord in your brain. They didn't want any parts of it. They brought her back. I can give you a list of stuff that just generally doesn't happen to us, and abductions is one of them.
According to the Daily Mail, the bastion of truth, the cigar-shaped interstellar comet that is currently in our solar system, it has the best name ever because it was discovered in Hawaii. Oumuamua, one leading astronomer, according to the Daily Mail, says it's an alien probe with broken engines. So if you see Oumuamua around about Jupiter, it's going 196,000 miles. It's 260 feet wide, a mile long. So it's just this big cigar. SETI is aiming its telescopes at it to see if there's any radio waves coming out of it.
Does it have windows?
We don't know. I don't know. You know, maybe aliens don't need windows. Maybe they could see through rock. We don't know.
I feel like I'm about to say they use a Mac. Huh?
That's a good use. That's a very good use. Yeah. Yeah. No windows, just a Mac. Ladies and gentlemen, I will conclude with Oumuamua. Oumuamua, and thank you all for aliens use a Mac. I got it. I just got it. They don't use Windows. It's good. I got it. Okay.
I apologize.
Thank you, Dan Gilmore. Always a pleasure to have Dan on the show. Dan is dangilmore.com. Of course, he's a professor, associate professor of journalism at the Walter Cronkite, the esteemed Walter Cronkite School of Journalism. At, did I get it wrong? I think I got it wrong last time you were on it. Is it Arizona State, ASU?
ASU.
It is ASU. Okay. At Arizona State. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for joining us, Dan. Really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. Thanks to Owen J.J. Stone, Odokta. He's been resting, letting his kidneys rumble. You'll find his future works at IQMZ.com.
So let me just talk to people because I usually do.
I'm going to let you do the closing sermon.
Got you.
You do the closing sermon. Back. Let me just thank Harry McCracken, also the Technologizer. Find him at Fast Company, where he's a technology editor.
Thank you, Leo.
And his wife, his wonderful wife, Marie Domingo. I'm glad you brought her. Hi, Marie. Thank you all for joining us. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. We had a great studio audience. Thank you all for being here from Australia, New Zealand, and San Francisco, all over the world. If you want to join us, we would love it. But please, we ask now that you email us ahead of time so we know to expect you. Otherwise, I can't promise you can get in. We have high security here at the facility, so just email tickets at twit.tv, and we'll make sure you have a nice, comfortable seat put out for you. Watch live at twit.tv/live, but you can also watch on demand at twit.tv. In fact, all of our shows are available in audio and video on demand. Find your favorite podcast app and subscribe. That would be the best thing to do. Next week and the week after, we have special shows for the holidays. Next week, it's going to be our year end, which we've already recorded with our hosts, Father Robert Ballasier, Jason Howell, Megan Maroney, and I. We talked about, the big stories of 2017. And it was a fun episode. The following Sunday, we release our best of, which some of the best moments, thanks to you chosen by our fans from the 2017 Twits. And I will be back in studio here to do another live Twit on January 7th. Have a wonderful holiday. Christmas, if you celebrate it, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, winter solstice, summer solstice, whatever the solstice is that you're celebrating. We hope you have a happy 2018 as well. And now, a closing thought from Odokta, Owen J.J. Stone.
So piggybacking on the happy holiday and whichever holiday you celebrate, that sounds awesome. We were talking about Facebook and Twitter and being on the internet and how sometimes it can ruin things. But I'm telling you, call your aunt, call your uncle, yes. call your friend. Call yes. that person yes. that's single, that doesn't have a significant other or children. Check in on them. Yes. It's the most wonderful time of the year, but this is the time of the year where people get really depressed and lonely, and your phone call can make the difference.
Oh,
you stopping by can make the difference. Oh. You sending a Christmas card or a holiday card can make the difference. If you want to make a difference in somebody's life, just reach out to them. Send a text message, make a phone call. Tell somebody you love them. Like I tell Uncle Leo, I love
them.
Like
I love you, Owen.
Tis the season. We're ready for the new year. Do something positive. Check in on somebody because you never know they might need it.
Another twit's in the can. Happy New Year, Doctor. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. That's a beautiful sentiment. Yeah. Right on. Doing the twit.